Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November 22nd, 2011 Carrboro Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. We have a very busy agenda this evening, so we're going to attempt to move through it as quickly as possible so that members of the public are interested in items 4, 5, and 6, which are Triangle Regional Transit Program Alternatives, Transportation Improvement Program Regional Priority List, and request to consider a resolution of intent to pursue the construction of a sewer line. It is possible that we may not have staff presentations on any of these three items. I do anticipate that the board will probably consider the resolutions that go along with these three items, but we may not have a time for our staff presentation on any of those three items tonight. So if you're sticking around to hear a staff presentation, you may not hear one on those. All right. Do we have a – is there a sign-up sheet?
Yes. For speakers?
Okay.
I wanted to acknowledge that this is Alderman Brown's last really full meeting, and I think it's really neat that we're hitting on all of the major issues in one meeting, and we're going to keep her here late. And
yeah, we didn't want you to miss out on anything.
That's right.
Let me begin by recognizing Alderman Randy Haven O'Donnell.
I wanted to recognize the Friends of the Library. Our Friends of the Library have received a state recognition. And, is this part of your 3 minutes? Okay.
Thank you, Board of Aldermen. Thank you, Randy. I'm Neris Levy, and I'm here representing the Friends of the Carrboro Library. Could you please stand up, please? The Friends of the Carrboro Library, on the 22nd of October, were awarded the first prize for library advocacy in the state of North Carolina by the Friends of North Carolina Public Libraries. Never in the history of public libraries in North Carolina has one Friends group fought for 25 years for a public library. And we were given the first place prize, given the promise of the Southwest Orange Regional Branch Library. There's money, $5.5 million, and also $550,000 for land. So we are here to seek a resolution of recognition from the town of Carrboro, and we want to thank you for all your ongoing support, and we'd like to recognize our county librarian, Lucinda Munger, and our librarian, Ann Pusey, for all their work and support. Thank you.
Thank you, Friends of the Library.
All right. We will probably have a resolution at a later date drafted, but thank you for coming tonight. All right. I also have Tina Saldana signed up. Tina, are you here?
Mm-hmm.
Come on up. Would you please come to the microphone?
Mark?
Yes.
Will we get to this? My resolution.
We'll get to that right after.
Okay. Thank you.
Petitions.
My name is Tina Saldana, and I live at 200 Westview Drive. And we come to you tonight regarding 901 West Main. We understand that this issue will be coming before you and that the owners will be requesting a change in zoning from a grandfathered R10 nonconforming retail to a business zone. We have for you a couple of letters for your review. We have one from RSI, the residential home across from West 901 West Main, and one signed by 75 of the neighbors of nearby property and owners. In short, these letters provide some background on what has happened since the new ownership and our concern about the process in place for monitoring and approving any changes for the business at this location. We are prepared to provide more input regarding the problems at later public meetings. We know from the Town of Carrboro's Planning and Zoning Department and the town attorney that in order for the owners to sell alcohol for on-premise consumption, which they have indicated they would like to do, that they would have to re-seek a rezoning. But we are here tonight to ask for clarification as to what they can currently do under their grandfather clause on two items. The original site was a small retail business with an off-premise only, malt-only ABC, and we want to know if off-premise wine sales are also allowed or if this would be a change in the business and thus an increase in the extent of nonconformity. The State of North Carolina ABC Commission states many reasons for requiring an additional permit for off-premise wine sales, and the original owner did not have this permit. We also seek clarification as to whether a business which promotes gathering at the site is also an increase in the extent of nonconformity for the grandfathered retail business. In other words, what type of criteria does the town use to determine when a small retail store changes in nature to a business that promotes or is functioning as a gathering place? I provide to you tonight the copies of the letters and also a written request for the clarification on these issues.
Tina, do you have one for our clerk as well so she can enter it into the record?
Yes, I have seven copies, and I can get another copy
okay.
over there.
Okay.
Okay. Joel said she can have hers because this is her last meeting.
it's my next to last.
Next to last.
Because I got to come on the 29th.
But that just.
Do we have answers for her right now, or should we refer this to staff?
I think referring to staff answers. Is probably what's in order. So I'll take that as a motion.
Second.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tina.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. I'd also like to ask that Tina be kept in the loop whenever anything concerning this comes up that she knows about it, including in-house meetings and public hearings, that they're kept abreast of what's going on, not just Tina but all the people who signed it.
Okay. I see there are a lot of people here who are signed up to speak on various matters that are on our agenda. Is there anyone else here who is here to speak on a matter that is not on our printed agenda? What were you going to speak regarding? Okay, come up, please.
Introduce myself. I'm Greta Lee. I'm a Orange County Master Gardener volunteer and the coordinator of the Northside Community Garden. And as you may be aware, the Northside Community Garden is on the site of new elementary school number 11. And we've known for a while that school was coming, but we didn't know exactly when. And we've just found out in the beginning of November that we have to have the garden moved by the 1st of January because demolition is starting. And so we had approached the Baldwin Community Garden, which is located in Baldwin Park in Carrboro, about joining with them. We talked to them last spring, but we thought the garden was too small. But we have not really found other options for the Northside Community Garden. We would like to keep it in the neighborhood. So what we're here today is to ask we have met with the Baldwin Community Garden folks last Tuesday. They are agreeable to having Northside join with them. And we have several resources, including a cistern and a small 8x8 shed that we would like to bring to the garden. And so currently the Baldwin Community Garden, I think, has an agreement with the town that they would not put any amenities outside the fence. And so we are asking, in view of our need to move hastily, and also that this would tremendously benefit the Baldwin Community Garden, to have permission to put the a cistern and a shed immediately outside the fence, as indicated on the map here. Leo Gave had already talked with Wendell and Anita at the Department of Public Works about the possibility of putting in a cistern and using putting gutters on the picnic shelter to collect rainwater to fill the cistern. And he was preparing a formal proposal, but his plan had been to put the cistern at the far northwest corner of the garden. This is an additional 70 feet away, so it's a lot of extra pipe, a lot of distance to run an underground pipe. So if he could put the shorter cistern closer in on the outside of the fence.
When did you say that you're going to have to vacate the Northside School site?
Demolition is planned to start in January. So we
like
have to
January 1st or January 31st? Or
They've been moving things up on us. They said mid-January, but everything has been accelerated.
Okay. Can you hold on for just one moment?
Okay.
I don't know what it is. I mean, you know.
It's not that big a deal.
I'd like to know how Randy Dodd sees this. I understand bringing this to Rex and Parks, but Randy Dodd and a crew of folks work really hard on setting this a certain way, and so I'd like to see us at least refer it to Randy.
Yeah, I think we need to refer it to the staff more generally and hear back from them. I guess the the challenge for us is that we have only one meeting, and it's mostly a ceremonial meeting in December. Normally, exclusively ceremonial meeting in December, and then our first meeting in January is January 10th.
What if we did it before the closed session next Tuesday?
Well, but we're not necessarily. I don't know whether everybody's planning on being here for that meeting or not. We could set it for December 6th.
Right. And if staff isn't ready, then set it for January.
So is the assumption that a cistern would be constructed before sometime in January?
I'm not making any assumptions at all.
I'm not quite clear why this can't be on a regular.
Just a question for Greta. Is there an urgency for moving the shed and cistern, given that there's demolition that's about to happen?
That's right. We would like to get everything moved in the middle of December, if possible, because we don't know how the weather's going to permit. You know, there will be maybe some delays, et cetera.
Okay. We have a lot on our agenda tonight.
Why don't we ask staff to accommodate that need to move that, you know, whether to a permanent location or a temporary location?
And they could even just kind of put it out at MLK Park until we figure out what to do with it.
Well, or you could tell the county you're just, I mean.
I don't know if they go tell the county that, because they ain't going to spend so much amount of money on building the school because they got a limit. Because, you know, that's what they've been doing with the school system. You can spend X amount of money building it.
Well, what's wrong, Dan? What's your objection to scheduling it for December 6th?
That's fine. If staff can respond to that.
Do you think staff can respond to this petition in that time frame? All right. So that's the motion from Randy.
Second.
From Dan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passes unanimously. So we're going to take this up briefly on December 6th.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Greta.
All right. That brings us to item B, resolutions and proclamations. I'm going to get to charges in a minute. Dan Coleman.
Yeah, I have two resolutions that I put before the board. The first is basically a adaptation of the resolution that Council Member Easton put before the Chapel Hill Town Council last night of apology to the reporters who were detained at on November 13th outside of the Yates Motor Building, and it acknowledges that our officers did not have any role in the planning or execution of that, but were only there in a supporting role for Chapel Hill. But nonetheless, the News and Observer has explicitly asked for an apology. I think, you know, that we, as well as Chapel Hill, you know, with Bill of Rights Day upon us in 2 weeks, I think we need to be very clear that we don't, that our society depends on reporters being able to do their job. And so I am moving this resolution.
Hold second.
Second.
So
Could you read the therefore clause?
Now, therefore, the town of Carrboro apologizes officially for its part in any improper actions taken against Ms. Farrell and Mr. Davis and will work to ensure that such actions do not occur in the future.
Okay. It's been, that's been moved. Was there a second?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. I think there's probably not that much to add. Thank you for drafting it, Dan. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Okay. My second resolution speaks more generally to the unarmed and, as far as we know, cooperating citizens who are held at gunpoint and handcuffed outside of Yates, not referring to the people who were trespassing inside the building particularly. And again, I've written it in a way where I'm trying not to assign blame in particular because we don't know all the details in that regard, and also reflecting the limited role of our own officers. But really, what's motivating this is a sense of empathy that I know if I were had a automatic rifle held to my head when I was just standing on a public street, I would feel better if someone apologized, even if it was part of, even if it turned out it was part of an appropriate action by the Chapel Hill Police, which is as yet indeterminate. I just think that that's not a pleasant experience for citizens, and it's an uncalled for experience most of the time. And I would like us, I'm going to move this resolution.
Second.
To apologize.
Second that.
Yes, ma'am.
I think it's premature until we get a report. I just, my sense is that, let me go out controversially. I think the board should wait until they get a report. I think that we do a lot of resolutions, and I'm not opposed to resolutions, but I think that we need to get a report before we make that kind of resolution. And
I respond.
Yes, and then Jackie.
Yeah, I just want for the information for the citizens in regard to that point that in the whereas clauses of this resolution, it does say whereas the town of Chapel is reviewing the events of November 13th, mm-hmm. and the results of that review are not yet known, and whereas in government as in private life, certain offenses merit an apology even if all the facts are not yet known. So I have tried to address mm-hmm. Joel's concern. I'm not saying, Joel, you should be satisfied by that, but I just want to let my efforts be known.
Jackie.
I fully supported the first resolution. I think it was very clear, and it was very, I think that mistakes were made in dealing with the members of the press there. I cannot support the second one. I was scared and appalled by Sunday night. I went last night to the Chapel Hill Town Council meeting to kind of observe what was going on. I went outside because if anything happened, I wanted to see it myself and not just hear it secondhand. It was a very interesting, spirited experience. The police department was doing exactly what you would want a police department to do in that situation. The people there protesting were great, made their point. The town council, I thought, under difficult situations. I wish that they had passed the resolution of apology to the reporters. I don't want to do anything at this point with this resolution that would be second-guessing our police department. Our chief has been a police officer for over 27 years. I trust her judgment. The agreement between the police departments gives them both the ability to for the chiefs to work directly together, which for public safety we need for them to be able to do. I don't want either Chief Blue or Carolyn second guessing their decisions in emergencies. I want to wait and see what the Chapel Hill Council is going to have an internal review. They are going to have a review possibly done by their seated citizens board on policy issues, or bring in a group made up of third-party citizens. I don't want to second-guess that, and I don't want to assume that I know what really went on. My assumption is that our officers were acting on information that gave them reason to believe that they were entering a highly dangerous situation. Whether that information was right or wrong, I do not know, but that's what they went in there believing. Our officers are not stormtroopers. I'm not speaking for officers around the country. I'm speaking for our police officers and our police chief, who I really trust. So before I would take further action, I want to see what the reports coming out of Chapel Hill are. I trust, and Carolyn, I think we are so lucky to have her. I don't want her hands tied.
Lydia, and then Sammy.
Yeah, I think both aldermen make good points. I'm inclined to think the same way Jackie thinks, although I certainly see where Dan's coming from with this. I didn't get to see the Chapel Hill Council meeting last night. I'm aware of what kind of came out of it. And, you know, I, like everyone here, when we saw the pictures after the Yates arrest and so on, we were kind of shocked, you know. But I think a lot of the points Jackie makes are true in terms of the way that our police force and the way that Chapel Hill's police force would seem to operate. Now, and I want to, one of the whereases here I wanted to read in this resolution also was the whereas that says, whereas the Carrboro Police Department is known for its respectful treatment of citizens and its prudent and judicious use of police tactics. And my problem is I'm not sure why what went down, but I imagine there probably are some reasons that we just don't know. And that's why it makes me a little nervous to go this far and apologize yet. It's not even our force, but to go so far as to apologize without knowing exactly if we ever know why the police chose to act the way they acted.
Sammy, Dan, and Randy.
I think there's we have to contextualize what the incident that happened this past weekend. It was a time in this country where a lot of violence was had throughout the country, and I would consider it and contextualize it within that. And the reason to do that is it's necessary to recognize that we're in different times. Not to say that this is justified at any time, and not to say that I don't respect our police, but I would rather retract our apology than have an apology standing for the people who have been affected. I think that the degree of action, given that we do know that there weren't any dangerous weapons, we know that. That's been told to us. We should be able to issue an apology. So I'm all for issuing an apology, and I find it healthy that there are people who find this to be an excessive amount of violence. We live in a culture, and we're responsible for wars overseas, and we're responsible for torture. And I would say that a citizenry that allows its government to do that kind of stuff overseas I would hope, still has the sensitivity to react to something in its own town. And I see this as an extension of that, and I would encourage us to be very careful about our sensitivity towards extreme forms of violence. I think that there was enough time to really assess the situation. This happened over the span of 18 hours, and if it really was as dangerous as it was thought to be, I know that there are people passing through the storefront throughout the night and in the morning and in the afternoon. And those people, if it really was as dangerous as was thought, should have been told that that was the case. And I think there's something to be said about a reporter who gets thrown to the floor. That in itself should be signal of something amiss here. And I'm all for issuing an apology, and if I'm wrong, I will gladly retract that apology at a later time.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to something Jackie said, because when Jackie was talking about her trusting the judgment that our chief and officers made, I think it's important that we not give people the wrong impression, because in this regard, the only judgment made by our town was to support Chapel Hill under the mutual aid agreement that we have with them. And as soon as we send officers under the mutual aid agreement, they are under the command of the Chapel Hill police force. Mm-hmm. And it was entirely Chapel Hill who chose the method of the operation, who chose the tactics employed, and who brought out the CERT team. There was no one from Carrboro who was involved in any of the CERT operations, or who was, as I understand it, and Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but who was equipped to be able to participate in those. So I think it's important to recognize that my belief is that our officers behaved properly and did their duty under the mutual aid agreement, but nonetheless our involvement in this incident led to what appear to be some pretty serious wrongs and some poor judgment, and really what had to be some very terrifying experiences for citizens that were unnecessary. And anyway, I will stop there.
Randy and then Jackie.
I agree with Dan. I'm very concerned that Carrboro police officers were in a situation where they, because of the mutual aid agreement, they were under the command of Chapel Hill. The Carrboro Police Department does not, function in this way. They are most respectful of citizenry. They've earned the respect of the community. The community knows that they can approach Carrboro Police personnel, and so I really feel that, as Sammy said, if we make an apology, we find that information that is brought to us brings to light that an apology is not in order. I think it could be retracted, but I certainly feel that having assault weapons, present in the faces of citizens, it was horrific. And I think worst of all is knowing that, assault weapons were present, and as far as I'm concerned, if they knew that they had assault weapons present, there were people on the other side of the street, citizens on the other side of the street. An accident could have happened. So I totally support making an apology. And if need be to retract, then that's what we would do. But as it stands right now, I feel apology is warranted.
Joel, and then Jackie. Joel and then me.
We make decisions all the time based on a plethora of reports. Now, this is going to sound crazy, but of everybody on the board, I've had the most experience with the Carrboro Police Department and the Chapel Hill Police Department as a part of my former job as an assistant public defender. And by no means am I the biggest rah-rah for the police officers, and certainly a number of them could tell you that. But I think as a policy board, when you have language that says we are going to review our mutual aid, which is fine, but I don't think a resolution is the method that we need to go to do this. And if we apologize, then we retract it. It's like, well, we've put it out there, and then we're going to retract it. But it's already out there. When you talk about mutual aid, you talk about the ability of the police departments to make split decisions based upon what they knew at the time. For example, I was at the courthouse when Wendell Williamson was coming up the street shooting people, and mutual aid agreement meant that the Carrboro police were coming down Franklin Street and Rosemary Street. And while this is not, and I do not equate the behavior of the people who were arrested with Wendell Williamson, I'm trying to get you to understand that sometimes police officers make split decisions based upon what they've been told and what they know at the time. We don't know what they knew at the time. We don't know why they made that decision. We don't have a report. I'm not suggesting that we don't do, or the board or future boards apologize. What I'm saying is, prior to making that kind of resolution, and then say, based upon potentially something they should or should not done, we're going to then micromanage the police department. Maybe so. But if you're going to do that, then you've got to be very careful about the mutual aid agreement. And that's what I'm concerned about. Public safety is one of the basic things that towns provide, public safety. We know of places where public safety is not at the same caliber. We can complain all we want, but I think we should be as mindful as we do other things, as we do with this resolution. And that would be what I would say. I'm not going to disagree that there's plenty in the press about what occurred, but I like to see a report that says this and that, and we can say, okay, it was wrong. We need to modify the mutual aid agreement.
Yeah.
But I suggest to you, before you do that, you need to look at a report. And that, at this point, is why I would oppose it.
So it's going to be me and then Dan and then Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, this resolution is close to something that I could support. I think it's actually almost kind of ambiguous as it's currently written. There's one way of reading the first therefore clause, which is the town of Carrboro apologizes for its part in any actions in which unarmed cooperating citizens were unnecessarily held at gunpoint or handcuffed and further, or handcuffed. So I think there's two ways of reading that clause. One way of reading that clause is to read it to imply that this board, assuming that this board passed such a resolution, that this board had concluded that there was an action in which unarmed and cooperating citizens were unnecessarily held at gunpoint or handcuffed. There's another way of reading this, which says, which would be more to the effect that the town of Carrboro apologizes if unarmed and cooperating citizens were unnecessarily held at gunpoint or handcuffed. I think if it were rewritten to that second phraseology, in other words, to say the town of Carrboro apologizes if unarmed and cooperating citizens were unnecessarily held at gunpoint or handcuffed.
I think that's implicit in the fourth whereas.
But I don't see any reason for it not to be explicit in the resolved clause. I mean, I guess my point is I've known and worked with Chris Blue since he was a community-oriented policing officer on the streets of Northside over a decade ago. He is an outstanding law enforcement officer. He is not some sort of cowboy. He is somebody who cares deeply about his role in the community of Chapel Hill and cares deeply about the people of Chapel Hill. And I don't believe it is difficult for me to imagine that that he ordered his officers to respond in the way he did without some good reason why. The fact that he and the town of Chapel Hill have not been immediately forthcoming with what that reason is doesn't prove anything to me one way or another. It doesn't suggest anything to me one way or another. My guess, and it is just a guess, is that that there is a still ongoing investigation that is being conducted by the town of Chapel Hill with relation to this incident and with relation to some of the people who were involved in it. And you know, I'm not saying anybody should simply take my word for it that the town of Chapel Hill Police Department was necessarily completely in the right in what they were doing. But I also think it's unfair and incorrect to assume that they were completely in the wrong in what they were doing. So I think with if you delete "for its part in any actions in which" and substitute in the word "if" for that, then I'm very comfortable with the terms of this resolution because it acknowledges it more clearly in the resolved clause than acknowledges the reality that we don't have all the information at this point. And I'll further say we may never have all of the information because the nature of police investigations is that they are not they're not like any other part of what town government does. Everything else that we do, when we do the public's business, we do it out in public. But the nature of police work is that it has to be somewhat, information has to be somewhat more closely guarded. So I'd be prepared to vote for this resolution with that modification.
I'm not clear what exactly you're suggesting.
That it say the town of Carrboro apologizes if unarmed and cooperating citizens were unnecessarily held at gunpoint or handcuffed, and further resolved, blah, blah, blah. I'd be comfortable with
that. So that's a friendly amendment?
Well, I can't, as your chair, I can't offer that, but I'm saying I'm willing to vote for such a resolution if it's moved and seconded.
I think he asked his question.
I'll come right back. You guys think about that for a minute. I'm going to call on Jackie, or do you want to go ahead? You were next in the queue.
No, I'll let Jackie go.
Go ahead, Jackie.
I'm concerned that if we had police departments like some other cities, then I'd be all over this and more. But we don't. And I'm worried that I don't want to put either police department, and what we say does impact the Chapel Hill Police Department. We can't direct them, but it certainly is out there in the court of public opinion, and it influences them. I would not want to put our officers in a position where they, in having to make a split-second decision protecting themselves and citizens, erred because they were worried that that they would have a negative political response and put themselves or the community in danger. And even if it was just a split second or a half minute, if their ability to respond to a dangerous situation is influenced by what they think the political outcome of that action will be, then we're putting them in a situation that I don't want to put them in, where they could be where they could be hurt. These are people who lay their lives on the line for us, you know, and they really do. And we don't have mean, nasty police. Carolyn does a great job of getting rid of any cowboys on our force. I've seen it over the years. And I know Blue is the same way. And if we make our officers second-guess themselves and they say, well, you know, I think this is a really dangerous situation. I have evidence that it's a really dangerous situation. But if I'm wrong, man, I'm going to get hung out to dry. You know, that's what I'm worried about. And that's what I don't want to put. If we had departments that were giving us evidence that they were rogue, that they were spraying pepper in students' faces, that they were, like, mean people, yeah. But I don't want to endanger them or the people who they protect. That's why I support the one and not the other.
Mark, I'm going to add your suggested change to the resolution, if that's okay, with Randy. I think the conversation has made it clear that three of us support the original language. I think, Mark, your willingness to, you know, modify it to your satisfaction enables us to get something out there, and I think people in the community can then make their own judgment as to whether that if clause has been satisfied or not. So I see Randy nodding. So
I'll second that. Right. Friendly move.
And, you know, perhaps we can vote.
So I'm going to let Sammy get in the last word unless he says something really controversial.
Well,
turn it down, Sam.
Yeah, I just wanted to.
We have a long agenda.
Well, thank the board for considering these resolutions and reflecting what I feel is the sentiment of a lot of people in our community, and I think this is valuable. And I understand, you know, we can't micromanage everything, but we are responsible for the police force. We're the interface, and we're expected to sometimes have a say in our actions. And we're talking about lethal force here, and that's also dangerous, not just the perception of our police force. I would hope that our police have the thick skin enough to withstand this, and that we can regain our sensitivity and hopefully find ways to mitigate potential violence within our community from either side.
Okay. I think that was not that controversial. Resolutions as amended has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed?
No. Nay.
The matter passes 4-3. All right. Now on to our printed agenda. Yes. Oh, no, we have some charges. Yes. Is Dustin Shakur-Bayard here? Okay, Dustin, if you would come up and stand right in front of the clerk who has that laptop open right there. Is Jerry Glass also here? Okay. You just wait where you are, Jerry, 1 second. Dustin is joining the Environmental Advisory Board, and we're going to read him his charge now.
As a member of the Environmental Advisory Board, I will, 1, advise the Board of Aldermen on policies, ordinances, and administrative procedures regarding environmental protection and the conservation of natural resources. The areas of review for the EAB include new development, solid waste, air quality, stormwater management, energy conservation, solar energy, groundwater, natural resources, and other areas. 2, suggest to developers ways to utilize energy-efficient design techniques such as daylighting, siding, solar exterior lights, and other solar energy techniques as they become economically viable. This input from the EAB is to come at the request of the Board of Aldermen or as part of a concept review procedure. 3, adopt a set of guiding principles or goals for the EAB and review these goals periodically to determine if they are being obtained. And 4, take any other action authorized by the Board of Aldermen.
Yes.
You agree?
I agree.
All right, great. Just sign here. Welcome. Thank you very much. And meet the board. You start with a short one.
Nice to meet you. Thanks.
Thank you for your service. Thank you.
All right. Jerry, if you would come up. Jerry Glass is joining the Recreation and Parks Commission.
How are you? Good, thank you. As a Recreation and Parks Commission member, I will, one, advise the Board of Aldermen and Town Administration concerning, A, the acquisition of real or personal property to be used for park or recreation purposes and the maintenance and use of all town-owned, leased, or operated parks and recreational facilities. B, the operation of all recreational programs. And C, future needs for the acquisition of additional recreation facilities or the expansion of recreational programs and alternative means of acquiring such facilities or operating such programs. And two, report to the Board of Aldermen as requested by the Board and undertake such studies or perform such duties as the Board may request from time to time.
I will.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you for your
service.
All right. Okay. Now, onto our consent agenda. Item C, consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item number one is approval of minutes of previous meetings. Item number two is a request to set a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment making technical corrections to water quality buffer requirements per action of the Environmental Management Commission on July 14, 2011. There's a correction to that item. The public hearing should be scheduled for January 24th, not November 22nd. A request to adopt a resolution to award a service sidearm to a retiring police officer. Authorization of the interim town manager to award a contract for Bowling Creek Greenway Phase 1B preliminary engineering. Item number five is approval of a capital projects ordinance and municipal agreement with NCDOT to design and construct bicycle loop detectors. And item number six is a resolution calling a special meeting of the board for November 29th, 2011.
I'd like to pull item six, Mark.
And I have a brief comment on five.
I need to amend. I want a motion to amend number one.
Okay. With respect to number six, I would like to place that all the way at the end of our agenda. We can take up whatever questions you have about it at that time. We have an awful lot of people waiting to speak, and we could get bogged down in that topic. Number five, what was your question?
My brief comment is simply just to note for the public that this is approval of an ordinance and agreement with NCDOT to design and construct bicycle loop detectors, and that's an outgrowth of our comprehensive bicycle plan, and it's kind of neat to see that movement on the plan and that way of increasing safety for our bicyclists in town.
Bicycle loop detectors, it tells the traffic light that a bicycle is waiting at the traffic light. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, so
what was the correction on number one?
On page 12, I don't know where it would go. I think one of the comments that I made is that the board will need to decide, you know, is now the time for density at this particular spot or not, and I'd like that to be added to, or this particular location, I'd like that to be added to the...
Okay. I'll take that as a motion for items 1 through 5 with that amendment to the minutes. It's been seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. That brings us to item D1, an update from the North Carolina Department of Transportation on Smith Level Road. Mr. Manager?
This item is for the Board of Aldermen to receive a report from NCDOT staff regarding resident concerns with the Smith Level Road project. Is your third member here? Okay. I'll ask them to come to the podium. We've got John Nigro, Steve McGee, and... Dayton Martin, here from NCDOT. He'll come up to the podium.
Come here. Can I request that everybody who's outside come in?
No.
There's a TV out in the hall.
I'm sorry. There, the fire code allows for 75 people in this room, and that is all. There's a TV set up in the other room. So they can listen in from there.
Is there also overflow in the fire department?
Well, we may be able to do
it. It's not being used at this time, but it is available.
There is perhaps space and a TV set up in the fire department as well.
Perhaps for people who are here for other agenda items, if you would like to cede your seat for people who came for this agenda item, that may be helpful.
You could swap out. Okay. But one for one, please.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you, Carver.
All right. Great suggestion, Sammy. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Should we take questions, or how would y'all like to? Would you like to give you the information back from our telephone conversation, what we've done?
I would like you to summarize briefly what changes to the project are proposed from compared with what this board last considered.
Okay.
Please do.
We have eliminated some easements, permit utility easements, and some aerial utility easements that were proposed, I do believe, on the west side. There were a couple areas. Have y'all received any new plans?
This board hasn't seen them. I mean, the same department.
We've got some.
Okay.
I've got some.
Looks simple enough.
I wonder we don't know what's happening.
I live in a particular area y'all would like to speak about.
Well,
first, or they want to know why the utility easement.
I need to better understand what. I mean, I guess my impression from what I've been hearing from residents in the area is that the DOT is proposing more taking rather than less taking, as compared with whenever we last considered this issue about a year ago.
Well, we've made some adjustments since our conversation 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, but I wasn't a party to that conversation. That's okay. I'm just explaining to you. So what I'm saying is, last plans I saw and understood were where we stood about a year ago.
And part of that, though, was we didn't get involved with water and sewer until at least a year ago. So it's the progression of the design that's taken place you're seeing additional easements out there.
Okay. And I'm sorry, could you gentlemen tell us your names?
Oh, I'm John Nigro. I'm a utility engineer.
Okay, great.
I'm Steve McKee. I'm the utility engineer also.
All right.
I'm Dayton Martin. I'm the utility coordinator for this project.
Okay. So what is the nature of the changes or any expansion of the profile of the project or of the easements?
Eliminated some easements.
Some easements, meaning there's less easement that you're requiring.
A lot.
Okay.
A lot less. We do have to add a couple easements. They're mainly little small, like 20 by 20. I think there's like three. They're called guy easements. If you ever see a power pole and you see these wires behind them with tension, that's a guy easement.
Okay.
And that's what we have requested.
Can you put the map up and show us where the easements are that are gone and where the easements are that you're adding?
Lay it on the projector there. We'll see it up on the big screen.
We have lots of concerned citizens.
We would like to see this in writing.
It's on the plans.
Hold on just a second. For folks in the audience, there's going to come a point where people who've signed up and who want to speak can speak. I'm going to recognize you. We have a long agenda and a lot of people who want to speak, not only on this item but on other items tonight. So we're going to keep strict order in terms of being recognized. Go ahead, sir.
All right. These easements, let me just give you a rundown. These easements are necessary due to federal guidelines on clear and recovery. The federal guideline institutes on all road projects in urban areas, it's like, and we're strict with it, like 12 to 18 feet from the traveling passenger lane. In case somebody falls asleep, they go off the side of the road, go across the sidewalk, wham, they hit the pole. They're going to sue the state, and they're going to sue the power company. And the federal guidelines will come, the federal people will come and get us. Now, you can ride down the road and probably right here and see a pole this far from the back of the curb. Because in the old days, that's the way it was. But we have to go by today's standards to get federal, this is a federal aided project. And we have to get federal, to get federal aid, we have to go by the federal guidelines, the National Transportation Guidelines. And all power companies throughout the state, just not Piedmont EMC, asked for a 30-foot easement, an aerial easement. And what we do, we try to put them as close as we can to the road. We don't used to in the olden days, we say, we'll go out here and we'll put you way out here at the edge of the right-of-way and then go 15 feet for a power line. And we try now to get them inside 5 feet or 3 feet, whatever we can to eliminate that easement. But at most, we use our right-of-way as part of their 15-foot easement, and then they have to get an easement for trees, for maintenance, hurricane issues, equipment, the guys on the boom to maintain the lines if a storm comes on the backside.
Okay. Can you point to a specific location on there where there's a need for an expanded easement?
I do believe this is for the water line, all the easement you see on the east. Like right here. See, this pole's going to be in the sidewalk. The sidewalk. We can't have that. We've got a ditch right here. We can't stick a pole in the ditch. So we're going to have to put that pole back here, a certain amount of footage from the edge of the pavement, and then we're going to have to get a PUE. And I do believe it's
What's a PUE?
What's a PUE? A
permit utility easement.
Okay.
An AUE is an aerial utility easement.
Okay.
Cut trees in both of them. But an aerial utility easement, you can't run a water line down it. You can cross it. Okay. You can't run it parallel.
This is not clear.
I'm concerned that there's not been adequate preparation done for this presentation and that we should perhaps have an agenda item where, in fact, before we even get to the meeting in our packets, there are maps that show us clearly delineated where these easements are, whose properties they're encroaching on, and what the purpose is.
I would like photographs as well as maps because I can't tell.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we should come back to this with, because it's going to take us all night to figure out. You know, the citizens here are going to come up and they're going to say, well, here's my property, and what's happening there.
We're trying to figure out what's going on. And hang them on the wall.
Something
the old versus the new.
That would be very helpful.
On one hand, I'm hearing less easement, and on the other, which if I were a neighbor, I'd be going, phew, yeah. And then I'm hearing, but in some cases, we're going to have to take more.
No, we're not taking more. Excuse me. We're eliminating a whole lot of easement, but I'm having to leave just a couple of areas.
Okay. But more than we thought.
On the west side.
Joel. I got an idea. I think you should move the meeting.
I could say.
And have two meetings. The first meeting will be with the neighbors to have both maps so they can clearly identify where their property is and where the new easements are. And that would enable people to know where they stood. And then the second meeting is for everybody who was unhappy with that first meeting.
The second meeting would be a meeting of this board.
Of this,
so it'd be an informational meeting. And then
right.
The board
and an informational meeting first, and then a meeting with this board.
And I note that you're not going to go to either one.
She might.
Well, now, y'all do know that I have voted against doing this. And so, let me be on that note, because I knew this is exactly what was going to happen. And it's not DOT's fault.
It's a policy decision that was made by this board. Now you're good.
Okay. Lydia.
Okay.
At this information meeting, I think the question of the neighbors, my question would be, what does it mean to have the easement? You know, does it mean, what does it mean pre-construction, during construction, afterward? Mm-hmm. You know, what does it mean in terms of upkeep? You know, do they come in and occasionally repair or whatever? You know, kind of from start to finish, I think an explanation of what that term easement actually means.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going
to
take...
And I think we'll need to know that, too.
Right. I'm going to take what Joel suggested as a motion that we proceed on that basis. Is there a second?
I'll second Joel's motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those of you who came from the vicinity of Smith Level Road to speak tonight who are signed up here, I know this board still very much wants to hear from you about this, but I think both this board, we on the board want to understand what the proposal really is better, and we would like to hear your comments once DOT has made it more clear to you as well what exactly the proposal is, and so therefore we will take this matter back up. I would like to suggest that it would be, you know, it would be most helpful to us to go ahead and schedule that meeting, the first of those meetings with the neighbors, as soon as possible.
Right.
And Mr. Manager, I think you can take it as implicit from this board that as soon as that meeting is done, that this board is eager to take this matter back up and have a discussion.
And that we know about that.
Do you mind if I make one comment?
Wait a minute. You may absolutely do that. I'm going to recognize her first, and then you, and that's all I'm going to recognize for right now. Yes, ma'am.
I would like to know.
Come up to the mic, please.
Right where these young
people are. You have to get past all these guys.
Engineers. They probably all went to NC State, so keep an eye on them.
I would like to know if there's any place that we, the citizenry, can see this latest proposal. Every time I want to find out what the latest provision is, I end up having to pull teeth.
Okay.
And I don't think that's very
all right,
fair.
Here's one
guy.
Mr. Manager, if we could ask DOT. They've got these gigantic printers at DOT. They just run those off, no problem. Could we get a copy of PDF version or something like that of some of those plans to post on our town website so that
and Matt, could you run those by Jackie and make sure she's satisfied with the layout?
Keep it to about scale.
Thank you.
That's important.
Pictures so that we know what it's referring to.
I think
photographs.
Well, the photographs would probably come later when this meeting. Matter returns before this board. Probably would be the point where we might do that.
Just one point. Although Dayton was addressing the power poles, literally the entire water lines throughout the entire run of Smith Level are going to be relocated. Mm-hmm. New water lines are going in. So part of what's going in the proposed easements is this new water line, and it's critical that it be installed. In fact, Owassa contributed almost a third. It's going to be contributing almost a third of the cost to reinstall those lines. And I think, as some of you are all aware, your fire marshal had asked for additional fire hydrants out within the project limits.
Okay, that's helpful context. All right.
You had someone else who you were going to...
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Yes. And did we vote on the motion?
No.
We have not voted on the motion. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, my name is Anil Perez Silva. I'm the president of the Burial Homeowner Association, and at least 10% of the homes in our neighborhood are directly affected by this new plan that has been put forward. what the DOT said today is that they are either broadening or narrowing the easements on the Berry Hill side of the road. What the DOT has not said is that the power lines that they're talking about are currently on the opposite side of the road, and that has never been reflected in the original plans, to the best of our knowledge. And therefore, what we really need to ask, even before we get down to the subject of do the neighbors agree with the amount of the real property that you want to take, is what on earth's possessing them to move the damn lines over to our side of the road?
Okay, they may be prepared.
Because this is our property.
And we'll find out all that.
And, you know, they may be from NC State. We've got a whole bunch of very smart electrical engineers and utility engineers in our neighborhood who are not from NC State.
Can I respond? I assume you're talking about the west side of the project, the AUE. The reason that was put on there is we work all 100 counties in this state. We work projects, you know, big, small, super highways, intersections, you name it. Money's tight for everybody, you know, town, state, federal, whatever, you know. But we're running these problems or policies. People are nitpicking about water and sewer together. I mean, excuse me, water and power lines in the same easement. And I've run across three cases throughout the state where they wanted me to get a 30-foot easement rather than a 15. So I assumed, okay, we'll go to the other side and do a 15 over here and a 15 over there. I sat down with John after my phone conversation with the town and the division engineer, Patty Eason, and John informed me, yes, we could do this in one easement. So I was just trying to cover all my bases in case something come up. And also another thing, right-of-way has instructed us for the last 3 years, do not add easements. After they go and contact you about buying your property, don't come back and say, well, I need a guy pocket. I need a 10-foot easement to put a telephone pedestal. Because right. The price doubles. And the property owner goes, well, you know, why didn't you tell me this the first time? And okay. That's the reason.
All right. That I think we will get further to the bottom of that and other issues at the community informational meeting. We look forward to doing that as soon as possible, and we'll hopefully take this matter back up as soon as that meeting has been held. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
I have a question first. I thought you were going to recognize me.
Oh, no.
I
was waving you off.
When I went like this. And you.
And then I went like like that. But, Dan, what is your question?
My question's for Matt. Matt, am I correct that work on the acquisition or other aspects of this would not proceed until we complete our review?
DOT is already in their right-of-way acquisition phase, but there's quite a bit of time left in this phase, almost another year. So they're at the very beginning of this process, so I can't speak to whether or not they can proceed without our review or not.
Okay. Well, you had indicated in an email to us earlier that there was some town property or town control that they would need to cross and that would then hold that up.
They have asked for an easement from the town. We have indicated to NCDOT staff we will not consider it until the board is ready to move forward with this project.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Very good. All right. So all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. I very much hope that we will be able to have this matter back before the Board of Aldermen in January, if at all possible. Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for coming out.
Yes.
And we're going to try and do right by it.
All right.
Tell the other folks they can switch in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. Okay.
I suggested that for you so you could get out more.
Thank you. But I'm
yeah, we'll at least start the process.
I wait till basketball season. Is it basketball season yet?
It started.
Oh, there's a game time. I forgot to take it.
We want our game master.
Okay. That brings us to item D2. Y'all can discuss it in the hall, please. That brings us to item D2, a follow-up report on limited anti-lingering ordinance for the area near the intersection of Jones Ferry Road and Davie Road. Mr. Manager.
We have some brief comments from Chief Hutchison, and then it's free for the board to discuss and hear public comment.
Go ahead, Chief.
Okay. Thank you for having me here tonight. Following the board's last discussion of the limited anti-lingering ordinance, you all requested some additional information, and you have a report that speaks to this. Specifically, you had asked that we gather complaints related to these sorts of issues that we thought were related to lingering. From the period of 2003 through 2007. We also researched the cost of having additional outreach personnel on site. We researched the use of a no-stopping zone to encourage contractors to adhere to the current hours. You asked that we provide police department presence at Future Justice United meetings, and that's in order. That we research Orange County's role in providing services to this area, and we provide a current map showing right of way along both sides of Davie Road. I think what's different now than in times past is we have a lot of community members who are focusing some very positive energy in this area. The Human Rights Center at Abbey Court has fostered very positive relationships with day laborers and residents. Members of Justice United and El Centro Hispano are currently seeking positive outcomes for people in this area. And the police department certainly plays a role, and we're trying to do our part to enhance community of life issues while working with these human service agencies. So I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Sammy, and then Lee.
Thank you for getting all that information on what the incidences in that area were prior to 2007. I think that's really useful for us to really get a sense of what kind of impact the anti-loitering ordinance had on preventing a lot of the issues in that area. Am I understanding correctly that, let me just read this one sentence, while the anti-lingering ordinance has reduced the incidence of loitering at the corner, the incidence of other crimes in that area has remained fairly constant for the past 10 years. Does that mean that there hasn't really been a significant change due or an effect from the anti-loitering?
I'd say that's exactly what that means, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
My question is related to the research costs of the additional outreach personnel, and I see where the pricing you've done is to if we added positions to, police positions to community services, Are there other models of community outreach folks that could work with day laborers that run out of, say, a community development office or out of a some other department rather than police department, or is it generally is such a person generally found in a police department?
I want to be very careful with the way that I respond. I think that communities do it different ways. So I'm afraid that I don't want to say that there is a general response to this issue. But I did speak with some people who believe that a police officer who is properly trained to make connections and establish relationships with day laborers, with contractors, with residents, and with representatives of other human service agencies is perhaps the best bet. I would add that there is an enforcement component to this. It should be a small component, but it's there. And if you have a civilian without enforcement authority, it could be a complication.
Dan.
Yeah, at the September 22nd meeting, I had asked that, as well as considering a town staff person for the outreach person there, that the possibility be investigated of either a collaboration with the agencies, or there perhaps it might be an agency employee that might be in part supported by the town. Am I correct that that latter aspect of it was not looked into tonight? Or
we did inquire with Orange County, and they said that the responsibility for this issue is ours, that they don't have people to assist. And, you know, we've had some very preliminary conversations with other human service organizations who did not feel they were in position to assist that way right now.
Okay, so but just preliminary conversations
right
at this point. Okay, thank you.
Can I add to that?
Yes, ma'am.
I know of many agencies who are laying people off right now. I think it would be a great position for a nonprofit human service agency to take on, but people are laying staff off.
Yeah.
Yeah, there would need to be funding available, or perhaps from a variety of sources, potentially.
Those are high enough.
And where would those come from?
On a slightly different note, I thought it was interesting to look at the map that was provided, or actually, I guess, a scenario photograph that's provided in the packet, which shows where the edge of the Davy Road right-of-way is, at least approximately. It's notable that it's significantly to the west of the chain link fence. In other words, there's a significant space, it appears, between the chain link fence and where the public's property begins. And I would guess, based on looking at this, that it appears that a good bit of the day labor market essentially is currently happening on private property. I mean, obviously it happens on both sides of the edge of the right-of-way, but where folks are standing, where most of the folks are standing most of the time, from my observation, appears to be on private property.
How do you see that? I don't see that.
Well, because I'm only 41, and it's very faint.
My vision is corrected.
it's a very faint line.
Is that the fence there?
No, the fence is the dashed line.
Oh, and the right of way is only here?
Oh, no, I see.
No, this is the right of way.
Oh, I have it backwards.
Yes.
You know, those young people, they get things wrong, Dan. Those youngsters can't tell where things are.
Well, we're not reading.
Reading comprehension skills that we were.
So
To clarify, Mr. Mayor, there is a right-of-way between the edge of the roadway and the chain-link fence that is public right-of-way.
Yeah.
Okay. So where is the chain-link fence showing on that?
Then? The scored line represents approximately the location.
The line is the right-of-way. The right-of-way is the chain-link fence.
Yes. Okay, so the chain-link fence is really pretty much right on the edge of the right-of-way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So everything is completely the opposite of what I just said. Okay. But that's also interesting and relevant. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, we don't think
so. I have something else if you're not.
Yes, go ahead.
I'll ask this question of Randy, because when I asked Carolyn, she told me you might know. Coming off off 54, going westbound, there's an extra lane there and a green area right by the end of the exit. When you were looking for other sites in that area, did you look into that, and what was the result of
DOT said absolutely not.
That they would not let the vehicle stop there or people congregate there either way. Okay.
And I guess you're aware that we had George Size look into the area at Willow Creek.
Right.
We looked at several spaces.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Mark, getting back to the resource officer, did staff look into the possibility of any grants that are available to assist in funding?
We have looked into that, but the timeline wasn't such that we could prepare a response for this evening.
Okay. Is that a viable option at some point?
It could be. I can't say for certain yes or no.
Okay, I have quite a number of people who are signed up to speak on this item. Why don't we go ahead and hear from them, and then we'll continue our discussion. The first person signed up is Reverend Campbell.
Good evening. I'm Minister Robert Campbell, the sitting president of the Chappahoochee Carver local branch of the NAACP, also the president of the Rogers Eubanks Neighborhood Association. Ladies and gentlemen, our community is in a crisis, but we have an opportunity here to resolve this issue. I remember sitting in this audience when the day labor issue came before this board. And at the time, it was said that this board does not handle this because it is a labor department issue. But then we turned around and we enacted a policy and we came up with this anti-lingering ordinance. Now, the root of the problem was that day laborers were being worked and not paid. That is the smoke screen over this whole issue. But you have an opportunity to resolve this issue by allowing the Human Rights Center to set up a community policing resource officer to collaborate this issue with the resident of Abbey Court. I know you have some money in your budget for community policing. So we have an opportunity to work this thing out and resolve this issue, because when we allow day laborers to be taken advantage of, and when we put an audience like this in place that will not allow them to be picked up to even work. I remember when I was growing up, there were four opportunities for day laborers to be picked up. One of them was Hardee's. The other one was at Crook Corner. There used to be Blackburn Market. The other one, it was across the street at the service station where Big Al Garage is now. And the fourth one was at Bill's Barbecue. But one of the things that was in the mix was that some of the police officers were also brick masons and contractors that was in the midst of that crowd. We had a working relationship with the police officer, so we knew what our rights were, where we could stand and where we could not stand. But we have also had respect for people who walk down the street at the same time. they were there to make sure that that was enforced. Where is that enforcement, and where is the collaboration between the police department and the day laborers? Rather than putting a policy in place, almost like what Chapel Hill did with the Yates building. They put a motion in place, and they sent the police officers out to alleviate that problem, but it created more problem. So we have an opportunity where now that we can have that collaboration between the police department along with the council and the people of Abbott Court and the day laborers to work this thing out and come to a peaceful resolution. And I think this audience should be rescinded. Give us the integrity of this Carver town that we can work out our issues rather than put the audience in place that would bring in police action.
Thanks very much, Reverend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Chris Brook. We'll just pass them down.
Thanks.
We got a long agenda. You know. We have a long agenda. So.
Good evening. My name is Chris Brook. I'm a staff attorney at the Southern Coalition for Social Justice in Durham. I live at 200 Elm Street here in Carrboro. Also a board member for the Chapel Hill Carrboro Human Rights Center. I just wanted to very briefly review the documents that I just handed to you. One of them is a New York Times editorial from September of this month, highlighting and summarizing the striking down of a similar, actually narrow ordinance in Redondo Beach, California, on First Amendment grounds, and calling on other municipalities to follow that lead and make sure that day laborers have their right to seek work protected under the First Amendment. The second is a brief letter from Professor Deborah Weissman, which says, in part, we determined Carolina Law Immigration and Human Rights Policy Clinic. We determined that the ordinance would be struck down as unconstitutional if challenged, and further reflects bad policy from a moral and human rights perspective. And then finally, a letter from Kate Wilmer Dieters, who's the managing attorney of the Immigration and Refugees Rights Project at the North Carolina Justice Center, that highlights the serious economic impact that such an ordinance would have on one of the most greatly impacted portions of our community, day labor community that's already in an economically precarious situation, while also highlighting that the ordinance has been selectively enforced. Certain Carrboro residents are allowed to congregate on that corner. Other Carrboro residents are not allowed to congregate on that corner. Neither Professor Weissman or Kate Wilmer Dieters could be here this evening. That's why I'm highlighting these for you. They asked me to do so. Those are just a few of the ways in which this ordinance really flies in the face of the community that I think we're trying to have here in Carrboro. I'll highlight a couple of others for you. As stated, this is just not a worker-friendly ordinance. It makes it more difficult for members of our community who already are in a precarious economic situation to find work. It punishes everyone for the conduct of a few bad actors. That is something that we just don't do in Carrboro. And it punishes people before anything bad has transpired. It is saying, we think something might happen bad in the future, therefore we're going to prohibit. Listen, if we had this conversation right now, this would be a misdemeanor. Me talking about this would be a misdemeanor under the ordinance. So it really flies in the face in 8 million ways, the values that we hold dear here in Carrboro. I do want to say before I close, in regards to the resource officer, I'm very interested in hearing more about this. I would want to make sure that with any resource officer that it serves to, you know, serve both the neighborhood but also the day laborer community, but it doesn't stigmatize that community or make it more difficult for day laborers to find work. So I hope that those things would be kept in mind when that's being considered. Calling you to rescind this ordinance this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Deere.
Mark, can we get one of those alarms, that Zen alarms that plays soothing sounds?
No. Let's keep going.
I think it should be alarming to speakers who are going over their time.
Let's just keep on going.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Deere. As you know, since the last week in October, I've been going to the corner for an hour on my lunch break from work every day, every work day, weekday. Usually some other people joined me. I've done this because I was pointing a finger at myself for not doing more after 4 years of my tax dollars being used to enforce this ordinance. I would oppose this ordinance if it applied to my street or anywhere in town. On a number of occasions, the police passed by, looked at us, and kept going without stopping. One time, four patrol cars drove by, apparently for some other reason, stopped right across the street from us for a few minutes, looking at us, and then they left. We were never approached by the police since last October. So the ordinance has been selectively enforced, and selective enforcement historically reflects an abuse of power and is inherently unjust. I took photographs and some video to document every day I was there, rain or shine, and posted them on Facebook. One cannot withhold enforcing an ordinance because doing so would violate political speech, as has been suggested, and then enforce it for some other reason, in this case, against Latino men standing on a street corner after 11 a.m. We got a lot of compliments, waves, and handshakes from men and women passing by. Only two people approached us to criticize us. One woman walked up to me and talked for 10 minutes. When she finished, I asked her if she thought she had every right to stand there at that spot for 10 minutes and talk to me, as I thought she did. She nodded. I told her that according to the town of Carbo, she had no such right to stand there and tell me how good the ordinance was, to which she said, good luck, and walked away. She had complained about the behavior of some men, and one of the things she said to me was, what are we going to do with them? Yesterday, a man drove by and yelled at us from his pickup truck, something to the effect that it has been great now that they can't gather here. Your ordinance reinforces these kinds of attitudes and brutalizes us. I recall 2 years ago, this is different from what I gave you, the police report claimed 2 years ago that the ordinance was effective, which was in effect saying we have taken care of the problem, we have found something to do with them. I'm very glad to hear this police report acknowledges how ineffective this ordinance has been. So please rescind the ordinance tonight. After that, we can face the hard work of building solutions without threatening and humiliating the people with whom solutions must be built. Proposals devised behind the scenes are going to have a lot of problems. The types of process used is paramount to forging solutions to the issues that intersect at Jones Ferry and Davie Roads. The process must reflect new standards of openness, transparency, inclusiveness, and diversity every step of the way, or proposals will necessarily fail, as this ordinance has failed. Thank you.
Actually, can I ask you a question, Steve? What was your purpose in eating lunch out there every day for the last month?
Well, like I said, it was what I told you on October 25th that night. I was very moved. I didn't wake up that morning thinking I would do that at all. But I was just very moved by hearing particularly the two day laborers who spoke and talking with them and other men afterwards and really realizing the impact that the ordinance had not only on them but on their families and on a whole array of things I had never thought about. Just all of their families and the impact it had on them. And I thought, God, you know, what have I been doing? I did that letter, but I haven't done enough, and I'm not boasting. I mean, and I wasn't trying to point the finger at you or anything like that. I trust that you think you're doing the right thing or you've been doing the right thing, but my tax dollars support this, and I also heard comments that night about my neighborhood, which I thought were highly inappropriate, and another neighborhood. I just thought that was inappropriate.
Well, thank you.
At the appropriate time.
Thank you, Steve. You can have a seat.
The reason I ask that question is that I think based partly on knowing you, partly on having spoken to you about this issue in the past, and partly on exactly what you said to us on, when was it, September 22nd, I took your actions to be a form of political protest. And I think it is unfair to our police department to suggest to use terms like selective enforcement when it comes to the particular situation where you were out there engaged in a type of political protest. Political protest speech is a type of speech that is much more highly protected by the Constitution than any other form of communication. It's my opinion, and I believe it's been, from what I understand, the policy of the police department to not enforce this ordinance with respect to people who were out there engaged in the highly protected activity of political protest. It had nothing to do with the race, gender, or anything else, any other personal characteristics of the person or people who were engaged in that protest. Our police department, I believe, is extremely sensitive to the notion of profiling or selectively enforcing ordinances, and I just felt the need to go ahead and address that point right now. The next person signed up to speak is Chris Kreutzer.
Joel, what does mens rea mean?
Intent.
Thank you.
A guilty mind.
Guilty mind. Okay. You form the intent in your mind to do something.
Thank you.
How y'all doing this evening? I'm Chris Kreutzer. I live at the corner there. Since this ordinance has been passed, things have definitely improved on the corner. Let's see. I should have prepared something. Let me tell you the way it was when people were there all day. Even if your intentions are the best, by 9 or 10 o'clock, if you haven't been picked up, you're not going to work. And I work with many people who are day laborers. I've hired these day laborers. So after that, say noon rolls around, probably about half of you say, hell, let's get a beer. So then you drink all day. That leads to things. Now, people who are just chronic alcoholics who know they're going to have drinking buddies come noontime will show up in my yard 9 a.m. drunk, penis in one hand, waving at me, urinating. All kinds of stuff have happened. A man was sitting on our yard. We used to not even mind people, you know, sitting there. There's a nice little shady spot, but there would be so much trash that I started politely asking people not to. One morning, my fiance asked a man, hey, sorry, this is private property. Would you mind just not sitting here? To which he replied, fuck you, bitch, you fucking cunt, in perfect English. one more thing before I run out of time. If you rescind this and people start drinking and breaking laws, I will be calling the police, which is something I've done. And when they get picked up, ICE will put a detainer on them and deport them for petty things like drunk in public. So your repealing this ordinance could have a very negative effect on the people you're trying to protect.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
I've seen it happen first in front of mine.
Next person signed up on this matter is Sophie Superman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could we get some clarification? Actually, excuse me for 1 second, Sophie. Where is 806?
It's next door to the TNO.
Okay, so you're right there. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sophie Superman, and I'm a Carborough resident. I'm also a student at Carolina Law. One of the reasons I live in Carborough is because of its warmth and hospitality to all people, regardless of who they love and where they come from and how much money they have. That's why I was so surprised that in 2007, Carborough adopted an anti-loitering ordinance that makes it a misdemeanor for people to merely be in a public place. Worse still is that the ordinance applies only to this corner of Davie and Jones Ferry, where predominantly Latino members of our community seek employment. This is not compatible with the welcoming, worker-friendly Carrboro I've come to love and is reason enough to rescind this ordinance. Members of the Board of Aldermen who support this ordinance have argued that they have attempted to narrowly tailor it to make it applicable for only 18 hours a day. Supporters have also highlighted that it has not cited anyone under this ordinance thus far, though day laborers are moved from the corner each day at 11 a.m. What these arguments fail to realize is that Carrboro's anti-loitering ordinance, well, how difficult this is to even say, does not exist in a vacuum. As a law student, I have seen numerous examples of one municipality following the lead of another when it comes to legislation. Our anti-loitering ordinance provides a model for other, less Latino and immigrant-friendly communities to follow. These communities might not even make an effort to narrowly tailor their ordinance, making it harder for day laborers in their community to make a living. These communities might arrest those who violate their ordinance, potentially resulting in immigration consequences for folks looking for an honest day's wage. I love Carrboro because it responds to challenges creatively and with all of its residents in mind. Providing our state with a progressive problem-solving model, I call on the Board of Aldermen to rescind this ordinance and get back to serving as a model we can be proud of.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you. Lori Hoyt, and then Rafael Gallegos after Lori.
Good evening. I'm here on behalf of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We've been in this community for almost 76 years, and we have a history of being in solidarity with workers and justice for workers. So we're here hoping that you will rescind this ordinance, and other people have spoken more eloquently than I can. So that's what we hope you'll do. I'm also a proud member of the NAACP.
And thank the you. Raging Grannies.
And yes.
I was thinking you're going to sing it.
Thanks, Lori. Next
time. All right. Rafael Gallegos and then Santiago Hernandez.
Good evening. My name is Rafael Gallegos, and I'm the associate director of the Chapel Hill and Carrboro Human Rights Center. And I wanted to thank you tonight. I want to thank the Board of Aldermen for allowing me to speak in support of the day laborers who gather at the intersection of Davy and Jones Ferry Road. Also, I want to mention to local residents who live in this surrounding community that we are aware of the concerns that you have, and that we're working towards ensuring that local residents will continue to maintain the quality of life that they're accustomed. However, I hope you all understand that during the last several years, many working class individuals who labor in the informal economy or in the low-paying jobs sector have been disproportionately affected by the struggling U.S. economy. As a result, they have had to rely on day labor sites to survive economically. During the last 3 years, I have had the opportunity to spend time with day laborers to understand how they navigate this labor market, and stemming from an innumerable amount of conversations, I have gained a good understanding of the economic impediments that this ordinance place on these men. And I just wanted to talk from some of the things that I've heard from them, but one of the things that that ordinance does that we really don't think about is that when you force someone to leave the corner at 11, that sometimes doesn't take into account, especially in the wintertime when it's still cold and a lot of the construction companies and people, the contract workers, are not able to work when it's still freezing outside, when there's ice on some of the job sites. And so, when you ask them to leave at 11 o'clock, you're really creating very difficult conditions for them to find employment. For the day to warm up and being able to go and do gardening jobs or construction jobs. And so I don't know whether that was sort of taken into account when this ordinance was created. Another thing is that it is true that most of the contractors will come early in the morning, But it's also true that a lot of the people, local residents like any of us, will come after 11 because, you know, many of them don't get up as early as 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock to find people to go to work. So when we not allow these people to be out there, we're certainly diminishing the possibilities of, for them to actually find a job. Another thing is that, you know, as Steve mentioned earlier, is that it is very heartbreaking to listen to them talk to you about the fact that a lot of their families are going hungry and the fact that in many instances they don't earn anything for weeks at a time and the fact that, you know, they have to rely on support from other workers or sometimes they have to ask for support from their families who are already struggling. And so I just wanted you to really have a better sense of the fact that it is very difficult out there. Jobs are not coming by. And if they, many of them, if they're able to get a job maybe two times a week, you know, that will be a successful week. But in most instances, that does not happen. And the fact that many of them have to survive off of $100 a week and having families back home, it's really difficult. So I just wanted to say that today we have the opportunity to provide much-needed assistance to those who are at the bottom of the social and economic ladder. Today, we have the opportunity to forge new bridges with a community of individuals that have been isolated and mistreated. Today, we have the opportunity to develop more positive ties with the Latino community in Carrboro. And today, we have the opportunity to uphold Carrboro Progressive's ideology of social, cultural, and economic inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Rafael. Santiago Hernandez, and then Michelle Johnson.
Buenas noches a todos. Me va a introducir Rafael, que está aquí conmigo.
Good evening, everyone.
Nosotros somos unos que nos paramos ahí en la esquina que estaba ahí en la figura. Y no le hacemos daño a nadie, sino que pasan lo de la ciudad, que quieren trabajadores, y ahí nos llevan a trabajar. Lo que queremos es que nos den más tiempo después de las 11 de la mañana. Nosotros respetamos a la policía, porque la policía es para eso, para que lo respetemos.
It says that he's one of the individuals who will stand at the corner that was illustrated earlier, and that he wants to let you know that, you know, not being able to stay after 11 really creates problems, and here just to work in the community.
Sí, yo de mi parte, yo respeto a la policía, creo también mis compañeros, y nunca he tenido un arresto, gracias a Dios, y me he portado bien, este... Nuestro interés es trabajar ahí. Unos son carpinteros, otros albañiles, otros al restaurante y otros a la yarda. Pero ahí pasa gente a traer trabajadores, gente de la ciudad, para llevarlos a trabajar a su trabajo.
Says that he understands that people, well, he goes there to work. He has never had any problems. He has never had any issues with the police. That in fact he appreciates what the police does. But it's important to understand that, you know, they're there to find employment. Oh, there's, you know, there's a lot of individuals there who have experiences in working in restaurants, yard work, construction, and so forth.
Sí, yo respeto a la gente y mis compañeros también. Respeto a la ciudad, respeto a la autoridad, respeto a la policía. Y lo que queremos es trabajar, tanto como ayudar a la comunidad, a la ciudad nos ocupa a nosotros, y nosotros también a la ciudad.
Said, all he wants is, you know, to find employment. He respects the city, he respects the police, he respects the community. All that he's asked is for the opportunity to find employment.
Ahora esperamos ustedes a ver que si nos dan más tiempo, porque muchos pasan a recoger trabajadores ya 12 a 1, 2 de la tarde, pasan y ya no encuentran gente ahí, y tienen necesidad de trabajador, y ya todos ya se fueron, porque ya pues todos temen a la policía, porque La policía dice que desalojen el lugar. Ahora queremos, si nos da más tiempo, y si no, ustedes dirán.
He says that you know, he's asking for more time after 11. Sometimes there's instances where people come to find workers after 11, sometimes one or two. And so he just wanted to, don't want to be bothered, you know, by the police, and he wants to have the opportunity to be there to find employment, you know, from the people that do come after 11.
Gracias a todos. Gracias a todos. Gracias. Buenas noches.
Gracias a usted.
Gracias. Gracias.
Okay. Michelle Johnson and then Alberto Rodriguez.
Hello. Soon I'll be sitting on that side of the room contemplating decisions that aren't simple, and we can tell that from what we're talking about this evening. And I come to you tonight as a social justice activist. As you know, as people have spoken about, the anti-lingering ordinance was a focus of my campaign. And as you'll learn, I don't focus on issues for the sake of getting elected. I focus on issues that are rooted in the value system of equality and justice. Carrboro is a community that prides itself as being progressive, liberal, open, inclusive, and accepting. I'm sure that when the ordinance was put into place, that great intention went into that. And we know that intent does not always match impact. As I understand, the ordinance was born out of complaints of behaviors that not only were disturbing to residents, and Chris mentioned that, this, living on Davie Road, but also complaints of behaviors that were illegal or broke the law. I want everyone in our community to be safe. And I know that some folks day-to-day, their lives have been impacted in a positive way by the ordinance. People feel safer. I also know that the day laborers have been impacted in a negative way by the ordinance. And they've expressed, and you've heard people just talk about it, feeling fear and shame in response to being policed in this way. There's a question about the constitutionality of the ordinance. And for a community which is focused on progressive thinking and action, we must do better than this ordinance. I've said it before, and I'll say it now, the ordinance needs to be rescinded. I'm not naive nor short-sighted, and I understand and will vow to continue to work on a long-term solution that will make all of our citizens and residents feel safe. And we need to do a better job on working on building relationships with all the residents and citizens of our community. The staff report presented indicates the possibility of a community outreach officer on site. And while I believe in community outreach officers, I'm a social worker, I think we need to be mindful of the possible effects of policing a group that is all brown and lower income. In addition, I have a background in working with survivors of sexual violence, and I'm aware that women have reported and experienced harassing behavior and that they haven't felt safe. And we can't stand for this in our community either, but the solution might not be more community policing. The workers have signed a code of conduct, and while I think this is good in principle and has merit, I find it problematic that they have to sign a code of conduct and other people don't. Perhaps we all need to sign a code of conduct. If we narrow this issue down to a cultural issue, we are missing the point because not everyone is engaging in this behavior. And plenty of other racial groups engage in harassing behavior and sexual violence. Lastly, I'm part of a task force that Justice United pulled together with many other organizations, including the Human Rights Center, El Centro Hispano, several Board of Aldermen members, the mayor, Southern Coalition for Social Justice, the Center for Civil Rights, and I'm probably leaving someone out. And it would serve the community board and town staff to work with this task force in a collaborative way as we move forward in identifying solutions and the possible work center. While a work center takes money and staff person, I'm sure we as a collective can come up with a solution that is socially just.
Thank you, Michelle. Alberto Rodriguez. And then Jose Francisco Gonzalez.
Buenas noches.
Yo también soy un trabajador de ahí de la esquina. Ya, yo ya tengo mucho tiempo ahí, como unos 15 años. Y Última, bueno, no muchas, a veces cuando consigo trabajo de planta, ya no me acerco a la esquina como otras personas. Muchas otras personas también encuentran trabajo ahí y trabajan por largos periodos y ya cuando se acaba el trabajo vuelven a regresar a la esquina.
So he's been a day laborer at the corner for almost 15 years. He, like many of the workers there, you know, he's able to find more permanent employment, and he will do that. And then when that ends, then he always have to go back, rely on this labor market.
Sí, esa persona se siente bien mal cuando llega el policía a las 11 de la mañana.
Sometimes it makes you feel bad, you know, when you see that the police comes at 11.
Unos amigos también sienten miedo a veces porque piensan que se los pueden llevar o por ese motivo a las 11 de la mañana y creo hasta unos corren con miedo.
So he knows some of his friends that they feel fear and that when they come, some of them even run away because they don't want to be detained or be in the situation where they may be detained.
Pero como ya uno ya sabemos la ley que ellos tienen, ya ellos le decimos que se calmen, que no pasa nada, y entonces ya se van calmados, y entonces por eso yo quisiera que pudiera quitar la ley.
And he says that him and other more daily laborers who've been there longer, they would explain to these individuals that, you know, they can stay and that the police are not going to arrest them, but he's here to ask you to please rescind the his ordinance because of what it makes people feel.
Porque no tenemos ningún cosas para correr. Si usted llega ahí a la esquina y pregunta a una persona ahí, le va a decir qué es lo que necesita aquí, y lo primero que le va a decir es trabajo. Cualquier cosa va a decir que puro trabajo necesita. No otra cosa, sino trabajo.
Said that there's really no reason for us to run away, and that if you go to the corner and you ask any of them, the first thing they will tell you is that they need a job, and that's all they need, just to have a job and nothing else. So that's all he has to say. Thank you.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
Manto.
Yes? I've got two more but go ahead.
It's getting late, and we've heard from a whole lot of people. There are conflicting needs in our community. One is to keep people safe, and I believe most people on the corner want to be safe. So I want to propose something. I'd like to move that we rescind the ordinance and that we look for ways of funding some kind of either community police officer or community resource person, and that we work to, in the early part of next year, strengthen our anti-harassment ordinance to look at harassing speech to women as being hate speech and have it prosecuted as hate speech. Because I really don't like the ethnic overtones and accusing people of complaining of somehow being racist. You know, I think that's really wrong, because in any language, grabbing your crotch and saying you want some of this, I don't think that that's part of any culture. I think that's part of really jerky people. And if you were walking down the street and there were a bunch of white guys on the corner and they held up their fist to brown or black people and said, I'm going to bash your head in, I think this would be a different conversation. And when a guy grabs his crotch, or sometimes, and I'm hearing, not even grabbing his crotch, just grabbing his penis and yelling things at women, that is a physical threat. And it is hate speech in the same way as I'm going to bash your head in because of your ethnicity. And I'm really disappointed that our progressive community doesn't get that in some places. So I want to move that we rescind the ordinance, that we look at ways of providing a resource person, and that we look at ways of strengthening our hate speech laws and our harassment of women ordinances. That's how I could feel comfortable with it.
I'll second that.
All right. I have two more people who are signed up to speak who I'm going to recognize, but thank you for putting it into that context, Jackie. Jose Francisco Gonzalez and Mark Dorison. And then Jeff Gill.
Mr. Mayor, I think you have me at the very top of the list.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Well, We'll, but we'll go ahead and have let's let's have Mr.
If you pass the resolution, I won't speak.
All right. All right. I'll recognize you when and if it fails to pass. Jose Francisco Gonzalez.
No, there's another guy. That's
it. Buenas noches a todos. Pues lo que yo digo es que quisiera que pusieran más tiempo ahí en la esquina después de las 11 de la mañana, porque como dijo hace rato un compañero mío, hay veces que los patrones van como a las 12 y media de la tarde o una de la tarde y buscando trabajadores y ahí ya no encuentran a nadie y los que pasan ahí por la esquina siempre ven a la gente ahí esperando para que el patrón se los lleve a trabajar.
I'm sorry.
Bueno, que quisiera que
yes, he would like to ask the board that if it's possible to add more time to the time that they are allowed to be at the corner. It is often the case that many of the employers come after 12, sometimes 1 or 2, and so they would like to have more time to have access to that employment.
Sí, les decía que cuando si ustedes pasan ahí por la esquina, van a ver a la gente que está esperando para que el patrón se los lleve a trabajar. No espera ahí por trabajo.
So sometimes when you see us at the corner, you know, we're just there waiting for someone to give us a job.
Y digo que también deberían también de castigar a que hay patrones que van ahí y se llevan a gente y nada más se burlan de esa gente y no les pagan o se burlan de ellos. También quisiera ver si mejoran eso.
He's saying that as he talks about the precariousness of work that happens at the corner, that it would be also great if something could be done about the issue of wage theft, where a lot of the employers don't pay the workers.
Y también hay patrones que se llevan a la gente y no sé, por una semana, varios días, no lo pagan al día. Por ejemplo, un trabajador trabaja como 5 días y al quinto día ya le dice el patrón, y yo te pago al quinto día, y si llega y pasa, ya se llega ese quinto día y no les pagan. Y ojalá también se mejorara eso.
Give an example. Sometimes there are instances where you're asked to work for 5 days, you know, for an entire week, and so the employer will tell you, you know, just keep working, I'll pay you at the end of the week, and what happens is that they never pay. And so he would like to ask you if that would be fantastic if something could be done about that as well.
También ahí hay como un basurero ahí, también hay uno se para ahí en la esquina y tratamos de no tirar basura ahí y como hay un basurero ahí, si vemos basura ahí tirada, ahí la levantamos del piso para tirarla ahí al bote de basura.
It says that you know, at the side currently there's a trash can, and whenever there's trash, you know, they certainly go there and try to pick it up and you know, maintain the area clean for them to be there.
Es todo, gracias.
Thank you. That's all.
Gracias.
Mark Dorison and then Bill Madden.
Thank you. My name is Mark Dorison. I'm the managing attorney at the UNC Center for Civil Rights, Carborough resident, former alderman. Encouraged to hear the resolution and hopeful about what may happen in a little while, but I do just want to say a couple of things about the ordinance. You know, it was almost exactly 4 years ago tonight that I stood here at this podium and urged this board not to adopt this ordinance for the same arguments I've been making for the last 4 years and that you heard tonight. It's unconstitutional, it's overbroad, and it's inconsistent with both the First Amendment and the values, I think, of this town. I do want to note, and I was encouraged to hear the resolution, because what we've been saying all along is if what you're worried about are particular behaviors like drinking or harassing people, that this ordinance doesn't do that. It doesn't do anything like that. What it does is makes it illegal to stand there, to be there in certain times of day and to do nothing. And it also doesn't do anything to prevent people from doing those behaviors from 5 a.m. to 11 a.m., right? The ordinance is a blunt instrument that you've taken to the Constitution, and it doesn't do what you'd hoped it would do. I also want to just mention two other things at this point. One is, as we begin what hopefully is a new era of collaboration with our brothers and sisters in the Latino community, I think it's incumbent on this board to really consider having translation services. There are a number of people here tonight who only speak Spanish and who haven't been able to hear any of the their comments have been translated, but they haven't been able to hear any of or understand any of the other comments, at least when there's an issue that particularly affects that community. And then finally, I just want to take issue with the mayor's point about selective enforcement. I strongly disagree with that. The idea that this board or that the police department can say that when Steve Deere is standing on the corner, that's political speech, that's protected, but when Latino workers are standing on the corner, that's a violation of the ordinance, is exactly selective enforcement, and it's exactly what is wrong with the statute. You can't say that this type of speech is okay and we're not going to enforce the ordinance, but this kind of speech is not. What Steve Deere did every day, what we did when we had a press conference out there, was clearly in violation of the ordinance as written. Clearly, it doesn't make any exception for political speech, and for you or to ask the police to try to judge that this speech.
But it doesn't have to, Mark. It would be unconstitutional as applied if it were.
But it's unconstitutional as written.
Well, according to you.
I mean, for you to be able to say that this conduct is different, if it wasn't Steve Deere, if it was just someone else standing out there, the fact that you, the idea that you knew him and knew he's a political activist should somehow change the nature.
He stood up here on September 22nd and told us he was doing this.
It's a long
you know?
Night, guys.
The conduct violated the ordinance. It's clear. You can't stand on that corner.
You can enforce the ordinance against that particular type of conduct, Mark.
Well,
you know that.
You couldn't because you know it would be unconstitutional. It would be struck down. I would just say, Mr. Mayor, that's a concession that the ordinance is unconstitutional by this
as
board.
As applied to that situation.
And I think, and the same is true for the press conference that was held out there. To say we won't enforce it in certain occasions that we'll determine and we will enforce it in other occasions is makes it fatally flawed and is a fundamental constitutional flaw. And I urge you to take up this resolution and rescind this ordinance tonight.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Bill Madden. I live at 124 Fidelity Street. I have lived at 116 Fidelity Street, amongst those two addresses, since about 1999, with 1 year at Ashley Forest in that town to the east of us. And Epic Court fue mi atraso para 12 meses, de medio del año 2003. 2004. I know what this place, I know what that corner looks like before and after this ordinance. I lived at Abbey Court for 12 months, not for lunchtime at a month. It was pretty bad. I really, really personally have really, really felt threatened. But my girlfriend that I lived with at the time was. Some of my coworkers, my coworkers who happened to be female from Weaver Street Market at the time and lived at Fidelity Court, there was no way, they told me from their own experience, that they would walk to catch the J bus, which runs a lot more than any other bus, at Davie and Jones Ferry. I was I had a foolish to move into that place, because what I didn't see when I went to sign up and what I saw later on at the corner was that a lot of men would be drinking when they couldn't get a job, when all the employers would leave in the latter portions of the morning. And the cops would chase them around Ridgewood, Abbey Court, behind that wooded area that's along Alabama, you know, where there's a great deal of burnout there, I mean, burned wood, and up and down Davy Road. It was like whack-a-mole. So it was pretty bad. It's gotten a lot better. The community needs to take better action in policing, self-policing, that if you see somebody out of line, call the cops. Call 911. If you see other men that are your friends harassing women, call the police. Put a stop to yourselves. It was not put a stop within the community, and that's why it got to the board alderman. I'm really tired about any type of speak of racism. All right? Stop it. Here in Carrboro, I've been living here for almost 20 years. I can't drive from Barrington to Homestead Road from, what is it, Hillsborough Road, because the people in that local community don't want people driving through their community. I can't go walking on a sidewalk in Tally-ho because the people that live in that community didn't want a sidewalk. So I live around Davie and Jones Ferry, and to see other people who come up here and speak against this, particularly when they don't mention their address, yeah, it's kind of insulting. Because what I learned from living there was that's not the Carrboro that the people I know from Weaver Street Market call Carrboro. It's the Carrboro that Carrboro forgot. And that's why I left.
Thanks, Bill. All right. Go ahead.
This ordinance was always, a blunt instrument. It captured broken chair.
Broke another chair.
The ordinance ended up netting workers who, in earnest, just wanted to get on the job, wanted to be available for the work, wasn't intended to net the workers. It was intended to pull in the people or to send a clear message to the people who were assembling who were not intending to work. I've been working with Justice United, with El Centro, in their last two locations. I was at the meeting in August. We continue to look for solutions for the workers. We continue to try to find community that will house a day laborer center. I urge the folks at Abbey Court to see if there's space at Abbey Court that we could work with, create partnerships. I mentioned two places that the town of Carrboro looked at. No, there were actually five places we looked at. It's very difficult, and things are not going to change all that much until we find the right space. A space that can create not only a worker station, but a worker center that will address other needs as well, as being a place to be, to be able to get connected to the contractors. I think Billy's exactly right. We need to work together as community so that the rescinding of this ordinance in and of itself is not the victory. The victory is in the community working to make sure that that by dismantling the ordinance that we hoped created security in the neighborhood can be carried out by each individual who's in the neighborhood, in the combined neighborhoods. We need to do that. I agree with Jackie. I'm glad Jackie brought the resolution forth. It's a very difficult situation, but when Chris gets up and speaks about having issues on his own property and he's right there, you know, that's something that we all need to stand up with Chris and make sure that that doesn't happen to him or anybody else along Davie, no matter where they are. If they're in Abbey Court, if they're on Davie Road, if they're on Alabama Road, we all need to stand up for each other.
And I would hope that the people who were here, this next project becomes protecting women and improving the laws and the enforcement of laws that prohibit harassing women and take that just as seriously, because I don't think people do.
Am I allowed to call the question if I was the second?
I was the second.
You were the second. I was the second.
It doesn't matter. I think
we vote. I'm glad we're afraid of
second.
Mr. Mayor, this is a point of order. I've got an ordinance here. It's one line that really, you don't have an ordinance in front of you, but here's an ordinance here that says Section 520 of the Carver Town Code, entitled Limitation on Use of Designated Right-of-Way, is repealed. So that would be the ordinance that you'd move.
Okay.
Well, no.
Plus the additional comments, but I'm just, as opposed to just rescinding the ordinance, repealing ordinance together with the other.
That is formally part of the motion. Yep. That's acceptable. Mover and seconder, or I assume.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So, just so that the staff can be clear on what we're asking of them, summarize for me one more time what the rest of that motion is.
The rest of that motion includes our working to strengthen anti-harassment ordinances and for harassment of women to be considered hate speech, for us to look at a way of making that hate speech just as if it were racially oriented.
Okay, so the staff will
enter a third
item. And the third item would be to look for ways of providing a community support person, whether that is through the town or through another organization.
And Mark, okay. I plan to make a motion fleshing out that last piece a little bit.
Okay. Well, let's vote on this motion first. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. Okay. Dan.
Yeah. I spoke with Judith Blau earlier today, and she talked to me about they have this fellow who's a half-time staff person for the Human Rights Center who's there, and I asked her about the possibility of town support of making that a full-time position, which would be a bargain for us compared to hiring an officer. And I also spoke with Pilar at El Centro, and there's some interest there in being involved as well. So the motion I would like to make is that the efforts to look into staffing for that corner include, but not be limited to, as well as town staffing as discussed in the report, the possibility of collaborating with the Human Rights Center, the possibility of collaborating with El Centro, and if it seems appropriate, the possibility of collaborating with both. And I would further like to move that if there are budgetary implications for this staffing decision, which I assume there will be, that the board be informed of those no later than the budget presentation for fiscal year 12-13, and that we otherwise receive progress reports between now and then.
Second.
Dan, can you, would we also, because of the work that has been done, include Justice United on that collaboration?
Well, I think that's...
They don't have a staff.
Yeah, I'm not limiting that. You know, I said not limited to, but this is a very targeted motion toward... I don't see Justice United.
Wasn't a question. I don't think, if I may, I gathered what you were getting at was the former two organizations have staff and professional staff and
a position to collaborate with
for that. Justice
the
United.
Only reason I bring that up is because there's an established task force that's working on this.
It's not a question of who the stakeholders are.
I understand, but if you feel.
Yeah, I don't think that I assume that the conversations with Justice United will continue, and I don't irrespective of my motion.
Okay, is there a second for Dan's motion?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
Actually, I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
So everybody sit down, because I got a comment. Not going to be long. So
That's all right.
I want everybody in this room to understand that I'll be back not on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, but probably the meeting after that, if they have one, or the first meeting in 2013, to see if anything's been done. And I'm going to hold everybody in this room who came up here and spoke about this, their feet to the fire. I do not apologize for saying that there may be a different standard in Lake Hogan Farms, as there is in Tally Ho, as there is on that corner. I will never apologize for that. Because the people who live in that neighborhood deserve the same quality of life that people do in my neighborhood at Spring Valley and anybody else's neighborhood who lives in Carrboro. And I will make this complaint about some progressive activities that they get you the right, but you can't effectively exercise it for anybody. So next year, about January 2013, because by that time I hopefully have my 13-year-old where he needs to be and he'll be 14, I'm going to ask the question, has the quality of life for the neighborhood adjacent to this corner improved or decreased? And I want everybody in this room who came, if you're living, to come back and respond to that. I'm done now.
Okay, we're going to take a 7-minute recess.
7 minutes. Thank you. second thing I have to do tomorrow. But I promise, you'll get it before
9:30. Okay.
Good evening. Welcome back. Whatever. Good night by now.
I'm about done. Let's get it working.
We got Dan here. We're now on item D3, a minor modification of existing conditional use permit for 300 East Main Street. Mr. Manager.
We have some brief comments from Marty Roop. I believe Laura Van Zant is here from Main Street Properties, and Mr. Palau is also here, so I believe we all want to address the issue.
Good evening. I'll try to be brief, considering it's already been a long evening, so I'll get to the point.
The night's young.
Yeah. So 300 East Main Street, the conditional use permit that was approved back in 2008. They are trying to iron out some last remaining issues before actually beginning construction. The first bit of construction would be for the hotel and a portion of the parking deck. And some issues have arisen related to Boys Street, so that's what we're here to discuss. Just ever so briefly, this is an aerial view of the existing conditions with the assemblage of parcels highlighted in yellow. This is the site plan, the originally approved site plan with the buildings shown in yellow. Boyd is off to the right with a sidewalk highlighted in yellow.
Can't find it.
The existing leg of Boyd that runs north-south would remain undisturbed. It's not under discussion at this time. As you'll recall, Boyd Street is to be straightened, go straight out to Main Street, running east to west. So we'll be discussing specifically the east to west portion along Boyd Street right-of-way. I'm going to focus in. And if you'll bear with me, because of the way the revised plans came in, I had to flip this so you'd see a consistent view from here on out.
Okay.
So,
here's
my mouse. Here we go. Main Street is running along here. Again, this is existing Boyd Street off of Main Street, and this is where Main Street and Boyd Street would now connect as construction moves forward. The parking deck is here. And the Palau Harmon property is in this location. This is the originally approved design. The dashed line you see here represents the extent of disturbance shown on the neighboring properties. This is the easement plan from the original, just indicating that the easements were shown in the original CUP plans. Now I'm going to move forward into what is proposed. I should mention, as we will come around to later, before I go into the designs, for the benefit of folks that haven't been made aware of this or are new to this tonight, what we're really discussing is whether or not an easement will or can be obtained from the neighboring Palau Harmon property to allow construction as it was originally shown in the approved CUP drawings. What Main Street Partners, as the applicant, has proposed are two alternative designs that would potentially allow construction of the Boyd Street and improvements to Boyd Street without touching the Palau Harmon property. So what they presented to the staff were two options. Let me first, just for the record, describe some of the details that were in that original drawing. 2.5-foot curb and gutter, 5-foot sidewalk, and a 24-foot face-to-face pavement and curb and gutter section. So alternative one involves a 4-foot sidewalk. Essentially, the 5-foot sidewalk was narrowed to 4 feet, and the curb and gutter section was also narrowed from 2.5 feet on either side to 2 feet on either side. Alternative two, and you have to look closely to see the difference, maintains the 5-foot sidewalk while further reducing the width of the gutter section to 18 inches. The pavement width in all three designs remains at 20 feet, but the curb and gutter section decreases in width with either option. The staff considered the options that were presented and determined, and I should state first and foremost, that the staff's recommendation is that if it is at all possible that the original design be constructed. We found that to be the best of all the options. If the board, however, determines that it's appropriate to approve an alternative, the staff considers the option that retains the 5-foot sidewalk to be the better of the two, striking a balance between vehicular access to the parking deck and pedestrian safety, considering there will be it's expected that there will be a fair number of pedestrians walking along there as well. I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, I'm trying to keep it relatively brief. I do have the recommendation statement up here, and I will very briefly mention the three conditions. The first is just that the final option two design, if that is what the board chooses to approve, we need to work out between the staff and the applicant some final design details. That's the first condition. The second condition is that if that design is constructed, the construction fencing be placed along the Palau Harmon properties. That was a request made by the neighbors, and the applicant has agreed to that if that is what the board chooses to approve. And the third is that the developer continue pursuing the easement up until the point that construction would be imminent, and that we would check in with them, with the applicant and the neighbors as it moves forward to ensure that that's being done, and we'll see if they can eventually get the easement. And the applicant, Laura Van Sant, representing Main Street Partners, does wish to make a few comments, and Mr. Palau is also asked to speak, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have three questions. One, tell me why the gutter size is that important, because you have one alternative that's the section is 18 inches, you have the other section is 2.5, and then there's one 2 feet. So explain to me what difference does it make?
I'll have George size. Looks like he's on his way. I'll have him address that.
The last time I can cross-examine the Cleveland State graduate. The last time I can hold it against him for the loss 2 years ago.
Our standard gutter section is 30 inch, and that matches up with our standard storm inlet sizes that
okay.
we have. In order to make this work, we didn't want the 30 inch standard section being out beyond that. We're trying to keep folks away from the curb and gutter.
Okay.
So narrowing the curb and gutter requires us then to come up with another inlet style that still meets the storm water requirements.
Okay.
So that's what we're proposing.
The second question for the third alternative, not for you, this is for staff, is what would be planning staff or the attorney? What does planning staff, what is the standard of good faith? Because what I necessarily think is good faith, someone else may not think is good faith. So
good faith with respect to what? I'm sorry.
But it says for the third alternative, it talks about includes continued good faith negotiations with the neighboring property owner. And that's something I circled when I read it and wrote my little note that said, who decides what is good faith and what standard are you going to hold? I mean,
how will you know if they're not that?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, what is the standard expectation for both sides of what is good faith? Because if one side has one difference of good faith and the other person has a different, what they consider to be good faith, I guess, you know, I don't want the planning staff to come back and say, okay, well, we thought it was good faith, but the developer doesn't think it's good faith, and neither does Mr. Palau. I'm not saying any of these people are acting in bad faith, but I think there has to be a general understanding of what that good faith is if that's going to be the alternative that we seek.
And what's the acceptance?
I think that condition is what I would call aspirational.
Okay.
Which is another way of saying unenforceable.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
And what with the last bullet, why would the developer need to continue pursuing an easement if we pass this?
Well, as a technicality, the developer would not necessarily need to, and that's the staff in discussing this recognized that if the board were to approve this tonight, it essentially potentially ends any discussions. So in fairness, we felt like, and especially considering we felt like the original design is the best overall design for the project, we felt like something perhaps aspirational, as Mr. Probe put it, but something should be in the record to allow us to potentially contact them, and this is hypothetical for the moment, but if the neighbor were to call us and say, you know, and I'm making up numbers as I speak here, if the board wishes to offer some more specificity, we would welcome that. But if the neighbor were to call and say, you know, we were in regular contact on two-week intervals and 2 months have passed and we've received no contact from mm-hmm. them, then I think that potentially would allow us to at least turn to the applicant and say, look, we have this condition and we're being told by the neighbor that 2 months have passed and you haven't made any contact.
But what could we then do about it?
It's as Mike suggests, it's somewhat aspirational. It's just a way to get in the record that our hope is that they will continue good faith negotiations, and that is to say if the neighbor desires to be a part of those negotiations, that they would consider
pursuing
that.
What's the holdup in the negotiations right now?
I would perhaps ask them to respond to that.
But before we get that, I have one more question for staff.
Yes, ma'am.
And that question is for whoever on staff can answer this. We got an email late, well, maybe not late, but in the afternoon with regards to a letter from the contractor that says, I will stay out of the easement if they don't agree to it. My question is, can the town require a bond for that?
Repair any damage or
repair any damage, that kind of thing. As a part of a condition if we alternate the whatever.
If the contractor doesn't live up to
right.
what they're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know how we would. You're talking about a bond that would indemnify a third party, not the town. I don't think we could step in and do that. We could, you know, we could enforce the ordinance, but I don't think we could require a bond to provide a source of compensation for a third party.
I was just asking. This is just the questions I had. I'm done.
Dan. Yeah,
I just want to follow up on Joel's second point, which yeah, I kind of think that last sentence in bullet three is maybe more complicated than it needs to be, and I was going to suggest that it could read that merely that the applicant will copy town staff on correspondence with the property owner and leave it at that. So that way you would be informed ongoing. It wouldn't need to be conditional. You would just be aware of what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's a little more straightforward.
Sure.
I like that.
Thank you,
Dan.
Okay. So, Mr. Palau, could you come up and address the board?
Boyd Street with our daughters. It's adjacent to the proposed parking deck and Boyd Street construction. Thanks for letting me address you again. Our understanding of the town staff's recommendation was for continued good faith negotiations between the neighbor, us, and the developer Main Street Properties to construct Boyd Street as approved by the board. And we just wanted to let you know that if you pass this minor modification permit, that would pretty much inhibit those good faith negotiations from going forward. I mean, I guess it would obliterate them. And so I wanted to put that out there. And then I guess I have just recently read this letter from Pat McCoy, the contractor that is going to build this road. And in it, Mr. McCoy assures you of many things. However, he doesn't say the one thing that concerns us the most, and that is that they can build
the retaining wall without encroaching on property. If you read his letter, it doesn't mention the retaining wall at all. And I don't know if there's other language in there that actually represents retaining wall, but he points out that he can build much of all that stuff without encroaching on property, which I do believe. But our question is, especially with a fence in place to protect our property, can they build that retaining wall? And I just don't want you to be persuaded by this letter that I think that any letter guaranteeing what the Main Street Properties would like to guarantee should specifically state, hey, we can build Boyd Street in its entirety with the retaining wall without encroaching our property. That Mr. McCoy's letter, it says very little to address that issue. Thanks.
Could you clarify for me what you mean when you say that approving Main Street Partners' request would put an end to good faith negotiation?
Well, the application as approved encroaches our property by 3 feet, like the actual construction of the road, the curb, the back of the curb actually just required a shoulder to support the curb, which actually was sort of like an appropriation of our property. And, you know, it was like pulling teeth to try to convince people that this is actually true, but in fact the board has issued a memo back in September saying that, oh, yeah, we would most likely require an easement or dedication of some sort from you guys to continue this. So, you know, we've been negotiating those points, but if you just let them build this road where they say that they need no easements, they need no interaction with us, well, then, you know, it's just, it's over. There's nothing to negotiate anymore. And that's a disadvantage for us just because of the nature of the changes that we're going to experience living there and the burden of road construction and deck construction that, while we don't want to stand in the way of Carborough's progress, you know, I've got to live there. And the curb, it's less than 20 feet from our front door. I mean, it's not like this is a project in my neighborhood. This is a project on top of my property. Mm-hmm. And so that's about all I have to say about the minor modification. Is simply, it's like, it allows them to sidestep any sort of meaningful negotiation with us whatsoever. And then we endure their project.
Mark? Jack?
What is the sticking point in the negotiation?
Well, I would say that basically, for the longest time, it was simply defining the terms of what we're negotiating. You know, back in April or May, we were passed documents that were very onerous temporary easement documents, mm-hmm. for long periods of time, deep encroachment on our property, crane swing, all this stuff, as if they never really even thought about how they were interacting with us. And through examination of the drawings, you know, I brought it to the town's attention that, look, it seems to be a permanent appropriation of my property, and that, in fact, is true. And so now, you know, it's just like offer, counteroffer. It doesn't, you know, I mean, I'm under the impression it's like making slow progress, but that's it. I mean, the sticking point is what are the things that we would like to see them do and have, and what are the things that they're willing to provide and do, and, you know, right now.
And what would you like?
Well, you know, I think some of the points of our negotiation should kind of remain confidential. I mean, that's the way they've proceeded, is telling us that, you know, all their offers are confidential. So, like, I mean, I don't know. I didn't come here really to air out our negotiation points. I mean, okay. I will if you want me to. It's just
I get it. It's fine.
I don't mean to be inappropriate.
It's okay. You're not inappropriate. It's fine. All it's right. Okay.
I'm holding it together a lot better than last time, I know.
You are. You're improving.
Well, it's actually just, I mean, before it was just like alarmed, but now I'm just actually just like disappointed and just kind of tired of this, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
So, staff, of the two options, it's option two that you were recommending, if any.
Yes.
Have I got that straight?
Yes, the option that retains the 5-foot sidewalk.
Is there Is there a motion for option two?
Are we not there from the developer or from Main Street?
Does anybody have any questions for the developer?
Well, they did want to say something, so we might as well. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that they do if we don't have any questions, I guess. I mean, it's 10:30.
I know that, but, you know.
Does anybody have any questions for the developer?
I don't want to vote on this until I know how it will affect, like, the retaining wall in the back.
Okay, come address the retaining wall question.
And remember when it was your neighborhood we were talking about.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I have a few words to say, but if you want me to, I can just address that specific question if you prefer, just given the hour. I think not mentioning the retaining wall in the letter was simply an oversight on Pat's part, and I didn't catch it. We have talked extensively to him as we developed this possible alternative is what could we do? Can it really be built without encroaching on the property? He assures me that it can. Pat is based in Charlotte, so he's not here tonight, but we do have Chad Abbott, our engineer, who maybe can address this with more specificity. But certainly in cities when, you know, they build buildings with footings and walls and everything else that are right up against people's properties, it's certainly possible. Our preference would still be to build the road as originally approved, and we do plan to continue to pursue that effort with Rick and Sally, you know, regardless of what your action is tonight, because that would be our preference. We simply devised this alternative because as we were in negotiations with them at one point over the summer, I got an email from Rick saying, we're not interested in negotiating with you. If you want to purchase our property, call our real estate agent. So we're like, well, we need to come up with an alternative. So this is the alternative. We still hope to get this done, but the real thing we need right now, the reason we're here tonight, even though we hope to still pursue negotiations with them, is because we can't get site plan approval until we have all the construction easements, and we can't get our bank loan closed until we have all of our permits. So we're just simply trying to avoid holding up that process.
Okay. Laura, are you comfortable with the suggestion I made about copying staff on correspondence?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to move attachment A with the change to the last sentence that I laid out earlier.
All right, it's been moved. Is there a second?
I had to second it.
All right.
Can we include something about the retaining wall?
Yeah, can
in
we
there?
Just make sure that that's.
They certainly can't. I have no problem with doing that. They certainly can't build anything on Mr. Palau's property without an easement. So, I mean, it's not as though this will somehow. There's nothing we could do that would ever authorize them to build something on Mr. Palau's property.
But to, like, raise it to the level of being in the public record.
That's fine. I'm just pointing out. Gotcha. It's fine. There's no reason not to put it in there as far as I'm concerned. Would be an appropriate place to reference that?
That we, something to the effect that the property owner has been assured that the property owner and the board have been assured that the retaining wall in the back can be built without encroaching on his property, and that the board expects this to occur or to be held to or something like that.
Right.
Okay, so it would be that a fourth condition that the retaining wall not encroach on the neighbor's property, on the Plow property.
Right.
Right.
Okay, yeah. That's fine.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passing unanimously. All right. This brings us to update on the Triangle Regional Transit Program.
We have a brief, and I've been assured, brief presentation for the board.
All right. I'm going to put the timer on.
I'm just writing on the back.
So Jeff told me the time was of the essence. If all of you remember Name That Tune, I can name that tune in one note. This is I can give you a 20-minute presentation in one slide. So we're going to just move to slide 21.
Implications for Carrboro. If you have a lot of questions about regional transit, you are lucky to have the chair of the MPO sitting in the midst of your table here in Alderman Lavelle. But the alternatives analysis process has moved along pretty well throughout the last year. We are hoping to get a final decision on the locally preferred alternative between Durham and Chapel Hill for a major transit investment, which would start at UNC Hospital and proceed to Alston Avenue in Durham. That vote would come in February at the MPO's Transportation Advisory Committee meeting. This presentation, which Jeff has and can be made available to all of you, has a whole bunch of information about some of the specifics. I'm happy to take your calls or your emails about specific questions. I know it's been a long night. But I thought the one thing that I would want to explain to you quickly before I step down is the implications for Carrboro. I took a look at the last time we spoke with the Carrboro board. It was about a year ago, almost to the week. And I think one of the key things that's most important with the way the design has gone forward is that one of the pieces of instruction we got from this board was that to the extent that we worked with Chapel Hill and the university to pursue anything that came through UNC, that the design of whatever finished over there did not preclude the ability to go to downtown Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Carolina North in the future. We believe we have done that with one of the alternatives were a couple of different locations are UNC Hospital and Station A3D right here. We believe we don't know. There's a lot of other challenging problems we would need to solve, but we think we've avoided precluding it from ever happening, which is the goal. So the second bullet I would share with you here is that University Square in downtown Chapel Hill has a redevelopment plan that I believe is sort of up for consideration in the town of Chapel Hill. When we did the corridor analysis called transitional analysis to focus on, find which places we were going to focus on, we wrote a brief white paper about how the train could be extended to Carrboro in the future. And this slide, if you look over here, there's a green line and a purple line, and that's basically using South Columbia and an extended Pittsboro Street as a couplet for the train. That green portion of the couplet on Pittsboro Street requires the removal of a fraternity house and the traversing of the University Square property behind the Franklin Street Baptist Church in an area that's currently a parking lot. So I'm going to leave the frat house question aside and let somebody else worry about that. But as they redevelop that property, to the extent that there's space left there for a vehicle to be able to make a left turn from Columbia onto Franklin, a left turn from Franklin into alignment with Pittsboro, and then continue back south. That also is something that preserves the ability to go to Carrboro in the future by having more options to do it. You could potentially put two tracks down Franklin Street, but or Rosemary or Cameron. They all have challenges. I don't think any of them are, you know, completely impossible. They all can, you know, they're trade-offs of community decisions and values. But what I would say is that if Carrboro is, again, most interested in keeping options open, you guys may want to consider communicating to the town of Chapel Hill about the University Square development and about the way the current parking lot is laid out there. We don't think is inhospitable to making it work. And if the way vehicle circulation and our staff and our engineering staff could provide some comment to you and to the town of Chapel Hill, if you thought that would be helpful. So wanted to flag that for you. Other items from last year that we discussed was consider including any rail extensions in Orange County, be it to downtown Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or elsewhere, in the 2040 LRTP, which Alderman Lavelle will be heavily involved in. And assuming the LPA is adopted in February of next year, then how it gets beyond UNC Hospital to other places would be a good next step to start thinking about and what a timetable might be to study that in the years to come. I'm going to break my own rule and just go back one slide just because I thought this would help too. This is in the packet. It's key dates. If you want a more detailed version of this presentation, just tune into the Orange Board of County Commissioners meeting on December 8th in the evening. There's a work session, 2 hours of excruciatingly painful detail. I'm done.
Patrick, do you know when the University Square, you know, what stage it's in right now?
I do not. I'd have to check with David Bonk, but I could get in touch with him and then communicate with you about that.
I think if we hear back about that, we know at some point we need to communicate, I guess, the university or whatever, the concern or the thought about perhaps a future rail alignment.
Sooner than later, because they're talking about.
Yeah,
I believe it's a pretty ripe issue, so I could get with Jeff and we could work with him.
Okay, that'd be great, Jeff.
And it's something that we've been wanting to express to them for a while, so I think we shouldn't wait any longer to do this. We should do it ASAP.
That's a good point.
I had one quick question, which is, you said it, one of the alternatives has implications for one of the fraternity houses at UNC?
Yes.
And what is that, Beta Theta Pi or something over
it's,
there?
So, if, okay, so imagine I'm standing at the lawn of the Carolina Inn, and I'm facing north. I'm outside, you know, for bluegrass or whatever. Uh-huh. Pittsboro Street is to my left. Whatever house is, if you stood in the middle of Pittsboro Street and looked straight ahead, I don't know the letters of the organization there.
So it's Delta on Cameron and the driveway. It's on Cameron and the driveway runs back to Granville. Is that it?
So what does that mean?
There is a driveway between the house and the, I think, either a property.
Oh, so it's not the one right on the corner.
No, it's next to Ms. Like, the driveway runs between the fraternity house and Ms. D's, and there's a driveway that runs through it that if you went straight up that driveway and crossed Cameron, you would be on Old Pittsboro. Is that correct?
I think so, but I'm not sure that the driveway and the road line up in a way that a train could dogleg.
No, I'm just trying to identify.
That's not the Deke house. It's next door to the Deke house, but anyway.
No, I'm at Ms. Yeah, it's not the Deke house, which faces...
That's on the actual corner. Okay.
Yeah, it's the one.
That's as much as I need to know about that, or more. And my other question is, this doesn't have direct implications for Carborough, but received a letter, which unfortunately I have not read in detail yet, from John Kent with the Audubon.
He's with the New Hope Creek Association.
New Hope Creek Association.
Is it the C1, C2 alternatives?
Right. Give me the essence of what the issue is that he's trying to get at, if you can.
So the New Hope Creek Association is a citizen group in Durham that is interested in the preservation of the New Hope Creek Corridor. When you look at the alignment in Durham County, and I haven't read this letter from Mr. Kent. Mr. Kent has been sending lots of organizations lots of letters about our project, and I have not read them all because he has not shared them all with us. But the tenor of Mr. Kent's letters tend to be focused on the area between I-40 and the Patterson Place area and where the South Square Mall used to be in Durham, and that his organization is concerned that the rail alignment traverses the New Hope Creek area. That's an alignment that's been on the map for the city of Durham and the MPO for over a decade. And part of the reason why it wound up there was that it was harder to put the line closer to 15501 because of a variety of things that are in the plans for how 15501 eventually becomes a more freeway-like facility.
So it's not the issue that he's getting at, and I realize you're not responsible for sort of representing him or whatever,
sure.
but just help me understand it at a broad level. The issue that he's getting at is not, for example, whether the route goes through Meadowmont or through Woodmont or whatever the other things
are. Yeah, I thought that was what
he may actually have an opinion about that, too, but I don't know about that.
That isn't the essence.
Most of his concern is focused on Durham.
Further up.
Within Durham.
I see.
That we hear about.
Okay. All right.
So at the hospital, there are like four different options, and to say that this is one of an open option is just assuring that we're still not at the point at choosing those options, I guess. When would that happen?
Well, that we're hoping that it will be chosen by February, and the...
So we are.
We are at a decision point. I'm trying to think if I have the map here. So looking here very quickly... there are two green dots down here. We looked at up to four station sites in the hospital area. The two that were acceptable to the university were the one in the UNC campus master plan, which would wind up elevated if you chose that. That's the end of the line. It can never be extended in the future. The town of Chapel Hill and the university met separately, and they came to a consensus agreement on the A3 location. We call it A3D because we looked at a few other sub things that we found had engineering and environmental flaws, and we threw those out. A3D, we believe, technically works, and environmental impacts can be managed or mitigated.
And so that's the one we want.
That's where the town and the university are.
Okay, cool.
And in terms of C1 versus C2, this basically gets down to whether the line winds up passing through the middle of Meadowmont or whether it goes through a to-be-built development. and follows more closely to 54.
Oh, correct.
Correct.
Okay.
That pair of options up on the upper right of the screen. The C1 alignment, the train would be elevated at the Friday Center. It would cross above grade over 54, go through Metamont. The other one goes by.
And I have just two brief questions about that. One is, if I recall, C1 is a little bit more expensive to build than C2. Is that correct?
It is.
A little bit in the context of what this whole project costs.
The cost as what we estimated last is that C1 costs $42 million extra.
Just a little bit.
So how much the whole project cost?
$1.4 billion.
To the Orange
County purse, the difference is about one-fourth of that, because those are assuming to be built with 50% federal and 25% state funds. The other wrinkle we have come up and discovered on the cost side is that with the NC-54 study that Durham and Chapel Hill have conducted together, Barbie Chapel Road, right here, the study predicts that the need there, even with a lot of super streets like at Europa Drive that have pedestrian accommodations, we might still need a triple left in two different directions at that intersection. So imagine three left turn lanes plus through lanes. And leaving aside whether or not that's the right solution for that intersection, which there's already a lot of discussion, which you guys will hear about at the MPO about that, sending a train at grade across a triple left is generally not a great idea, which means if we have to elevate there, the cost of C2 will come pretty close to C1.
Okay.
Now, we don't know that we will have to elevate C2 if we choose it, but it's the NC-54 study has raised that possibility.
Okay. Now, here's my other question, though, is so who ultimately will make the call on C1 versus C2?
The MPO.
The MPO.
They're the record keeper of the decision of record.
Okay. Obviously with a good bit of input from the town of Chapel Hill.
Exactly.
But just interesting to know.
Is one shaking out better environmentally than the other, C1, C2?
I think this is one of those things where the environmental results seem to be in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And I'm not an environmental wetlands expert, so I can tell you that when you look at C1 and C2, C1 impacts about just under 1 acre of wetlands. C1 impacts just under an acre. C2 impacts just under a quarter acre of wetlands. C2 impacts a slightly longer length of linear stream feet. I think it's 300 feet or 350 feet, and at C1 it's 250 feet. So those gory details are in the Section 3 of Volume 1. They were discussed in great detail in Chapel Hill last Monday night. But here's the key thing with the C1 and C2 recommendation that's important for this board and for Chapel Hill. We understand that there's a lot of complexity out here. You'll see all the acronyms, NCDOT, Federal Bureau of Land Management, Army Corps of Engineers. All of them have regulatory stakes in these alignments. The federal lands aren't involved in C2, but the other two organizations are involved either way. So we have to work with them to come up with a solution that is acceptable. So with the complexity out here, we're actually recommending moving both C1 and C2 forward to the environmental analysis stage. Mm-hmm. Because we were trying to come up with a recommendation, we're recommending C1 over C2 for reasons contained elsewhere in the presentation. The feedback we were getting from the town of Chapel Hill last week is that they want to advance them without preference for either C1 or C2, mm-hmm. and it's up to the MPO whether or not to take that advice.
Okay. Thanks.
It seems so, it's way past the stage of consideration, but it seems so weird to run it through a place that probably will never get developed.
Well, the stations are here and here.
Right.
And then trying to get to a station up there. We need to make a traversal here. That's part of the headwaters of Jordan Lake. We would have to cross that pretty much no matter what to link those stations, whether you go the northern or the southern route. We did look at something that came closer to the 54 intersection. DOT mixed it because of traffic impacts, and we saw problems with the two.
So back to that slide of the recommendations for Carrboro. Can we add all those to our thing? I'm not going to speak to anyone. I'm just wanting to make sure that we include all these and that they get reflected at whatever level they need to be.
That's a motion. I'll second it.
Okay.
That we endorse these recommendations.
So these are these are not recommendations. These are just identification of issues. You can choose to do whatever you want with them. So I just want.
Okay.
We need to be clear for my own boss. We're not recommending anything.
Okay. But you're saying it's a motion to advance all four of those
points. Right, to implement the implication.
Right. All right, moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Is there anything else you need from us right now?
Do not, and we're available for questions. Lots of detail on the December 8th BOCC meeting if you want to see
that. I just emailed.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.
All right.
I would also like to ask staff to find out what stage that development is. And to
sorry, which development? The one on 54?
No, the University Square.
Oh, University Square, yeah.
And to keep us posted on when and the timing on needing to intervene with that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sammy.
Good point, Sammy. All right. We probably don't need a specific motion on that. Item 5, is there any other resolution?
We just received the report, which we actually...
We just did.
Right. Yeah.
Item 5, Transportation Improvement Program Regional Priority List and 2016-20 STPDA Call for Projects. Let's hear it quickly. Where is this agenda item?
Received 24. Can we receive these?
I got my packets of 24. What's that?
Can we receive this update?
You mean just receive it without?
Was it truncated?
Yeah.
Well, are there questions from the board? Maybe even can we ask that question?
Well, we have to ask according to the time frame. The deadline is December 13th.
Oh, I'm not proposing to fail to act. I'm just saying you have the materials. Do you have any questions for the staff, or do we need to have our staff presentation?
I have one question.
Go for it.
It indicates under purpose that the TAB thinks it needs more time to finalize the list, meaning their list of recommendations for us, presumably. And I guess they meet again before the 13th, but effectively we don't.
Right.
So is there any meaningful understanding of that?
That relates to the 2016 to 2020 STPDA call for projects. There's a little bit more time for that.
Missed that qualification. Okay, great. Thank you.
One procedural note. There is a attachment A has three pages, just 2 and 3. Are actually an old set of pages. So if the board does pass any resolution as a procedural matter, it might be good to specifically exclude those pages.
It's only page A1.
Yes. Sorry. I apologize for that.
So we're ready to move to
Section
A?
It would be good if we did look at the recommendations and have any feedback provided at the top. I know it's really late, but there may, it'd be great to have some feedback for the tab to consider.
Do you have feedback you're thinking of?
Not necessarily.
Well, we set this list just in May. So I'm not sure what we need.
Yeah. Really, and in the list, the purpose here was Jeff's kind of telling us a little bit here about how this kind of new way of ranking that the group's working on, the way that they now have to rank for prioritization in the regional list.
But so what is, council on draft regional priority list and or MPO rating methodology is what we're supposed to insert into this resolution, A1. So where... What page is the regional priority list on?
The regional priority list isn't in the attached. If we were to include it on an 8x5x11 sheet, it would be so small that you couldn't even read it.
Okay.
But I have it right here, and I can bring it up if you need.
That would be helpful to me.
I also have a more readable summary.
I guess the point I'm trying to get at is, Dan, it's true, we did just adopt our list in May, but the part of the question here is our comments on the draft regional list.
Right.
And what's about the
Well, that's with the old one.
That's what we adopted in May. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is the way the new ranking kind of shook it out.
Oh, okay.
So this is a summary of the points that were assigned to Carborough projects, points or rankings, and the Estes Drive project received 50 points. This is out of a total of 100. Homestead Road received 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
Old NC86 from Hillsborough to Homestead received 0. Old NC86 from Homestead to Eubanks received 25. Again, these are draft recommended point totals to be considered by the MPA, by the TAC in December.
Uh-huh.
Eubanks got 25. And the Franklin Merritt Mill, Mangan Brewer intersection improvements received 0 points. And there's TAB recommendation points on the right-hand column if you have any questions about those. They're basically repeat what's in your agenda packet.
And do you know how these scores came about?
Yeah, they came about by the MPO establishing a ranking methodology.
But could you back up to the previous slide?
Yeah.
And actually the one before that. Now, it just seems to me, not having done a count, that there's likely a lot more bicyclists and pedestrians on number 3 than there are on number 4. So I guess I'm curious
about
given
the
that, yeah, why those numbers wouldn't be reversed, in fact.
Yeah, the evaluation takes into account multiple criteria, including congestion, safety, economic competitiveness, lane width, shoulder width, and multimodal bonus scores, as well as environmental impacts, community impacts, and environmental justice.
Because this ranking is in the highway division. I mean, in other words, what they're ranking here is various highway-related projects. I mean, we have some other projects that are bike ped improvements only that don't fall in this category. True?
Yes.
Right.
Is that possible, I guess?
So in other words, the point I'm getting at is they're not just looking at the, I mean, what interests us in these projects is the bike ped component,
right.
But the reason that they fall into the highway division is because they involve more than just bike and ped. So they're looking at more criteria than just bike and ped.
You know, when you think of riding your bike on those two stretches, think about, you know, that's a pretty dangerous section from Homestead on up to Eubanks with the tight lanes and the curves and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Really, from Hillsborough up to Homestead, it's fairly, maybe that's where
some not. It's not ideal, but it's not so bad. Either.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's also shorter.
Yeah.
Okay. So given, Jeff, all those daily criteria that they use to establish these scores, what kind of feedback would we give that would be influential? And because we don't know what their particular rating was on different points, we can't disagree with what goes into this score. You follow what I'm asking?
Yeah. The MPO score, which is based on the NCDOT score, the MPO score informs the number of points that the MPO can elect to give to projects. Therefore, the MPO score is not binding. In the evaluation of projects, the NCDOT quantitative score is a factor in the overall evaluation of projects. So you have the NCDOT score plus the rankings of the MPO and the division that factor the final score. So a potential comment that you could make would be that the MPO should consider assigning more points to one project or another, that indeed is what the TAB recommended for certain projects, because the MPO can elect to assign more points to certain projects.
So,
but they come from somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, there's only
that's the problem.
This is just for this highway list right here. There's only 1,300 points And there are various caveats to that, but overall there's 1,300 points available for distribution amongst all of the projects.
So what it kind of means is if we see something on here that like is a zero or we see, like we observe with this, that if our feedback was that we thought that it should have higher priority than the other, then that's information Jeff conveys back to the group as they sort out all of the points and try to ramp our points up a little bit, take away from some of our other points or some points elsewhere.
Jeff, for future, when we look at this again in the future, it would be helpful to have these slides in a packet so we can be, you know, have kind of a better context. Because without that, it was difficult to prepare properly for what we're doing.
So, Jeff, I just want to understand a little bit more clearly that we had 100 points to distribute, and they were distributed essentially between three of these four.
The NPO as a whole has 1,300 points to distribute to these projects.
To all the projects on the
to all highway projects.
On all highway projects.
But this 100 points is...
We're not limited to 100 points particularly. Okay. That's just how it shook out.
That's all we got.
That's how it shook out based on the criteria that they've adopted.
So actually, it might be interesting to see all the projects if y'all wanted to see how they show.
And really, that might be because I see all of the projects and how it shakes, and I always make sure that we're represented the way we should be for our size, and I know mm-hmm. Jeff does that too. But it might be instructive for everyone to kind of see mm-hmm. that to the list.
Because
is part of what you're telling me, Jeff, that one thing we could say is, well, we want to recommend that the score on number four be reduced by 15 points and 15 points be added to Estes Drive or something like that. That those are among the kind of changes we could make.
Exactly, and you don't necessarily have to find points from a specific project, but that could be part of it.
But presumably it would be difficult for them to object if we were saying reduce the score on one of ours and increase on the other.
That's a decision, I guess, that the TSC would...
The only reason I ask that question is just that, and so it seems like the only... So Estes is the only one that scored very well.
Yeah.
Is basically what you're telling me. And even that is really only kind of a mediocre score.
Well, and I'm
wondering... So, I mean, should we put all our eggs in one basket?
Right, I'm thinking give it 100 points. Give
or
Estes
put
100
we have
points.
Into it, maybe. Yeah.
Because how else do you signal... to to the MPO the great weight that we give it, the critical matter that Estes Drive presents.
It's once they introduce this is the first time they've mm-hmm. gone with this point total system, and once they introduce that introduces all these kinds of strategic game theory type elements in it. Like the state has a score for all of these projects in the MPO. And if it's a low state score, it's probably less likely to get on the step anyway. So some of the strategic questions that MPO staff have asked from various jurisdictions is, do you take those projects which got very high state scores and do you try and help those get over the line and get onto the step? I know, if you were to put all your points on the lowest score project on the list, probably wouldn't get anywhere. So that's part of the strategic element to this. I just wanted to point that
out. Well, and it says right there, for Estes, that this should be a top priority. So
that's the TRB's recommendation.
Well, so does the School of Government have a training for us in game theory? So we for this.
That's
no, I know, but these are it's these same six projects, aren't they? It's the same the six projects are the same six projects listed on A2, correct?
These projects right here
are all the same.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they are.
But
I just was looking at it to contemplate the question, like, is there something on this list that is actually more important than Estes Drive?
I'd say no.
Yeah,
no. None of us.
I mean, I think that's been the consensus for the last 7 to 10 years that Etsy Drive is still the most important.
Exactly.
And I, at least from my perspective, I would probably put Homestead Road second, which it is on our priority list, but the reality is that Homestead, you know, the solution on Homestead Road is even further away than Estes Drama, even further away in the future than Estes Drama. So, all right, well, I will entertain a motion for attachment A1 with the comment that you want to move.
So moved.
I want to change our point to consolidate all those points into the Estes Drive score.
Yeah.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. All right, well, I don't know about game theory, but this will test out the question anyway. All right. That's all on that, correct?
Yes.
Request to consider a resolution of intent to pursue the construction of the sewer line. Are there any questions from the board about this item?
I don't have any questions, but my suggestion to the board is now that this contains what is the estimated cost, my thoughts were, one, that information be forwarded to the county since we had already sent that letter.
Yes.
And have staff provide them as much detail as possible, and also talk to Owassa about how much contingency, because I was thinking nothing ever costs what the estimates are.
Second.
No.
You've been seconded. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
So y'all draft them.
I take it that was a motion also for the resolution itself.
Yeah,
true.
Right.
Yes.
Definitely.
Okay. All right.
And just one quick question. Given the timing of when the tax money comes online and the urgency of this, I was just wondering if there may be an opportunity to convey that we would like to explore ways in which to be reimbursed if we need to be paying.
That was the Owassa thing. I knew that. I didn't know you had brought up the discussion about. I think you need to write a Owassa letter that talks about that developer reimbursement, because if the town acts like the developer, then we should be reimbursed like they changed that ordinance. That's what it was. I knew I had another one.
Which is actually different than what Sammy was getting at, but it is a good point. Sammy, you're talking about the county potentially chipping in the next fiscal year.
Yeah, to figure out a mechanism by through which it, like, so that we're not like doing this too early and missing the boat, to say.
Right, few people would say we're doing it too early, but
right.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm just teasing.
I mean,
it's a good point, I think staff is looking into that at this point. Is that right?
Great, thanks.
Okay.
And is staff looking into the Owassa ordinance?
That I don't know.
We will
know.
Now.
They will. They are now. All right, very good.
Just because of where it's located.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
We have one more item. Item C6.
Yeah,
what?
C6. You wanted to hold it to the end.
Oh, C6.
What's that?
That's the special meeting.
The special meeting.
So what was the question about that?
I think there was some question about...
There's a lot of emails and I wanted some clarification.
Wasn't it originally that it was easiest rather than us just meeting at Jesse's?
Right.
For us to, like, just declare a meeting, but that everybody didn't have to come to it. It was the search committee was going to come to it.
Right.
But we had to declare it as a meeting.
Because
that doesn't mean that other people can't come if they're interested in coming, as long as they respect the role of the search committee.
Well, I'm going to disrespect the role of the search committee because I don't think that I certainly didn't envision the role of the search committee extending to the point of going from 10 applicants to 3 applicants. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, obviously.
I would like,
it's not in the minutes, and there's no other record.
Have you watched
and
it?
It's not, there's no video.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would like, be that as it may, I would like to participate. I would like to be part of deliberating on the 10 applicants that Springstead has boarded down to. And if that means I need to be added to the search committee to do that, then I would
then everybody that. Needs to be added.
Then because if you're added,
we can do it as
no, 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 no. Let me tell you why everybody needs to be added. I don't even know what experience you've had selecting anybody. You know, I'm at the end of my tenure, so I can say everything I want to. But I'm going to be diplomatic.
Well, that's irrelevant, Joel.
Well, no, it is irrelevant, because you made mention of it 2 weeks ago when you brought up, which I left you alone when the crowd was large, about bringing that anti-lingering ordinance without due process.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You do know what I'm talking about. When you wanted to vote on it before it even was on the board.
Stay on the topic.
I'll stay on the topic as long as you do. But it's part and parcel of what goes on. Now, the board made an agreement to do it one way, and now at the end, you want to change it to another way.
I never agreed that the search committee would
you
go to this
point. You were present, and if you didn't ask enough questions, too bad for you.
Because we laid out what the search committee had done in the past, and that the search committee got it narrowed down to the people who were coming for all day.
I mean, basically what you're arguing, Jackie, is excluding some board members from the process that they're
in. We are not arguing to
this. Yes, you are. Well, then don't exclude.
We're not. Well, you're changing the rules as
no,
we're
going
along. You're changing
you
the
are.
Process.
You
are.
You are.
I mean, what is the
issue here? I don't care
here?
Who's involved in it.
Yeah.
I really don't care who's involved in it. I think we have to be careful. We want to have a quorum. But
well, we have a quorum.
But
okay. Well, I've heard from I guess three of you about what your understanding of our prior agreement was about how this process was going to go. Does somebody who has not spoken yet have a recollection or opinion on this matter?
Here's one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up. It was my understanding that by the second week in November, we would be further into this process, and that there might be videotapes that were seen,
mm-hmm.
And I was really glad Lydia sent the email when she did, because you know, the process seemed stalled somewhere along the line.
Well, you know, that it seemed that way to you doesn't mean that it was.
Well, no, I'm not saying that
I mean,
it was.
They had a certain period of time that they advertised and solicited. They've
right.
been doing interviews. That you didn't know about it doesn't make it stalled.
Right. Oh, no, all I'm saying is that...
But it does make us at least 2 months behind schedule.
Yeah, and that's where I get stuck,
I mean,
because...
What schedule are you referring to?
The schedule that spring stuff laid out for us.
Right. We were supposed
back
to be
September.
Further along, and that's the reason, I'm more interested in seeing what's going on with this than I probably would have been in September, because we're not in September now. Now it's, you know, 2 weeks out from December.
I really don't care who participates in that meeting personally. There has not, you know, been some grand deviation, which seems to be what you're suggesting, from the procedure that was to be used. Springsped has been moving forward, has been following that process. It's unfolding at the pace that it's unfolding.
Yeah.
Well,
but I would have thought the folks on the committee would have seen video already and gone through that.
He doesn't have the videos, Jeff, because he's still interviewing people. And really, the process was that the search committee would view the videos, because last time we listened to the tapes.
That's right.
And narrow it down to the people who were coming to visit. This is not new. This is what we've laid out. If people are unhappy with that,
it's past
fine.
11.
It's past 11. I don't care.
Well, I mean, when I sent out the email a week or two ago, recognizing Joel was on the committee and knowing she was going off, I mean, I said, you know, we either need to replace Joel or just have the whole, whoever on the board wants to be involved in it. I mean, I feel like Sammy a little bit. I mean, if folks want to be involved in it, fine. Let's just get it. Let's just have it and get it rolling. You know, I think Michelle even wants to attend and
she hadn't been sworn in.
I think but Mike's
she can come.
Right. Mike said she could attend, but I don't, but my thing is, let's, you know, just kind of maybe after that point we have direction on where we go from there, but I certainly don't want to exclude anyone at all from the process who wants to be a part of it.
Mark, can you clarify what's supposed to happen next Tuesday? That's the other thing I want to be really.
We're going to hear about an hour long presentation from Mr. Anzavino from Springsted. He's going to tell us about, I think, something around 10 applicants that he has interviewed. And I think the notion is that we will narrow the field somehow to more like three or four who would have a more, you know, who will either do some kind of video interview that we would watch or perhaps would come here to be interviewed in person.
There's only four, my memory serves me correctly, only four people actually came to Carver.
Right.
Well, the ones he's going to tell about us about the 10, are we going to see his videos with them, or is he just going to summarize them for us, or do we know?
My understanding was he was going to summarize them and that he had, I don't know whether they were videos or just simply like CDs, but he had something on them for us to...
I'm not sure.
Which one it is. And the only other suggestion I'd make to y'all is ask everybody when you finally get the four or five that you want the same questions. These same questions. Because it is unfair to ask different people different questions. You need to ask the same question. If you don't ask the same questions, then you're not going to have a fair process. And you're going to end up with answers that you think you can rely on and you can't rely on.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion for the resolution.
There are two resolutions. There was one that was original in the packet, which is a resolution which is calling a special board meeting, which would mean that obviously that all board members would be there and could participate. And then there's another resolution which I drafted today, which says that your board is calling a meeting of the town manager search committee, which is four people. I'm not clear which resolution
because
you're moving.
We were going to make it a regular board meeting.
Okay, well, somebody make the motion.
I move that we have the motion for the entire board.
Yes.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
Just one really quick matter, y'all. I know our next meeting, when we swear in people, we do advisory board assignments. And I just wanted to suggest to other members of the board that we consider some of us who have been on boards for a while, maybe consider asking or seeking to rotate boards a little.
Shake it up a little.
Yeah, I mean, I've had citizens kind of mention to me that they'd also like to kind of see us rotate a little just to kind of get to know others better. So just a thought.
Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That's Joe's last motion. Your last motion.